Well, look who's back.
Yeah, good morning.
Look who has returned to us.
Good to be back. Good to be back.
Did you have a nice vacation?
Had a wonderful time up in northern Michigan, the Traverse City area there, Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore. It was just great.
Were you camping?
No. We stayed at a hotel that had some property on a beach, and Gilda and I were there and very much enjoyed 3-4 days in that area and saw some friends. A terrific time, and the weather cooperated, too.
Did you get any free stuff?
The mayor of Traverse City has returned.
No, we didn't get any free stuff, and I did not go into restaurants saying, maybe you know me. Perhaps you may have heard of me.
I don't know if you've... table for two for the Schwanee party?
No, nothing like that.
I don't believe you.
Oh, it's so nice to be back.
We missed you last week.
No, really?
Not really.
I got a text from
a
friend.
It's a polite thing
I got
to
a
say.
Text from a friend saying, oh, Dean's talking about you. So I wrote back and said, I'm not surprised. Yeah. No, it's good to be back, though, even though we have rather fall-like weather outside.
I don't think I said anything bad about him last week, did I, Andy?
No, I think we're just mentioning that he wasn't here.
Yeah, just said that the atmosphere seems a little more pleasant this week.
Something like that, yeah. Well,
no, we're glad you're back.
Well, it is good to be back.
We miss you when you're gone.
Okay.
I did the far-flung forecast last week.
Did you?
It was brilliant, by the way.
It was brilliant.
What was it?
I don't remember.
I can't remember either. It was that brilliant.
Oh.
You know, it's like what I always say. Once that goes down the conveyor belt,
it's done.
I'm done with it.
It's done. Yeah. You really don't remember?
I don't
And you don't remember either, Andy?
I don't. But it was... Oh,
it was brilliant.
It was Henry Ford.
Oh, yeah.
It was Henry Ford.
Henry Ford.
Dearborn, Michigan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard, he's kind of important in the automobile industry.
Yeah. I've heard the name before.
It was his birthday or something.
Yeah, something happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe the first Model T coming off the assembly line or something like that. Okay. Well... All right, I'll take your word for it. Henry Ford.
I worked
wonderful.
All week on it. Wonderful. I know that. I spent days and days researching it and putting it together, and you know, you got to structure it properly.
Yes, you do.
So the payoff has to come at the end. You can't give away what you're talking about too early.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So it was very tricky, but happy to hand it back over to you this week.
Okay.
Boy, this weather is just, isn't it hard
I know.
To get?
I don't like this. It looks fall-like out. Here it is, just the first full week of August. Right. No. Not going to. Are you awake? You sound like you're going to sleep in there now.
What'd you say? Hot dogs, hamburgers, spaghetti, and meatballs.
Sometimes the
Red Hot Chili Peppers will be headlining, closing out Lala.
You mean the big hoot nanny down in Grant Park?
The big hoot nanny and GP, as we like to call it.
Hoot nanny and Grant GP. I like that.
Yeah. This is the only band that I really wanted to see at Lollapalooza this year. And no offense to any of the others. I just didn't especially have an interest in any of the others. You know, we all have our musical taste. But I think they put the Red Hot Chili Peppers in for old people.
Define old people now.
Us.
this was about 1992-ish, probably.
Yeah,
that far back?
Yeah, that song. Ago. Yeah.
Wow.
Give it away, give it away,
that's
give it
31
away.
31 years
then
old.
Then they had Under the Bridge right after
Under
that.
Under the Bridge. I like that one, too.
I was playing that back in my
I was about
hot
to
DJ
ask,
days.
Did you play that in DJ days then?
Heck yeah.
Yeah?
Okay. I always liked them, Red Hot. They're Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're... you know, if you're going to look at the Lollapalooza band schedule, you know, 90% of the people, you have no idea who they are.
Did you go see Billie Eilish?
I didn't. I was there.
You were there?
The first day, but I didn't go see her perform.
Okay.
Because that was late at night.
Oh, past your bedtime.
When old people should be home. I had to be in my rocking chair.
Older
then.
People need their rest. So,
yeah, sure. Hibbity, dibbity, yeah. Rock and roll, Billie Eilishly. I like Billie Eilish music.
Well, this is why I asked
but
if
I
you were there.
I wouldn't stand in a big crowd to watch her perform.
If you wouldn't be standing out there waving your hands in the air and
like I just
dancing
don't care.
Around? Yeah.
Waving my hands in the air like I just don't care. No. Because I just don't you care. Don't. No, I like her music, but she's not somebody I would want to see in concert. Plenty of people were.
Oh, I know.
Just not my cup of tea.
That's what I heard.
Kendrick Lamar, you know, one of the biggest names in music right now. Also, you know, I enjoy his music. Not really want to stand in the crowd. But Red Hot Chili Peppers, I'm not going to go stand in the crowd. But of all the headliners, they're the only ones that I had some interest in. Because I'm old. And Herman's Hermits were not headlining.
Okay,
this
all right. That was my next question. Yeah. Herman's Hermits there.
I always liked Herman's Hermits.
I did, too.
Yeah.
In fact, I saw them live once.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Where?
In Muncie, Indiana.
No kidding.
And I'm not kidding. Yes. Talked with the band. Yeah. They were there. They were the headliners.
Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter. Something tells me I'm into something good. That's when a song was a song.
I asked to see her, and she told me I could.
So you went to see Herman's Hermits. I always enjoyed their music. But I enjoy today's music also. I enjoy both. Why can't you like both?
You can.
Of course you can.
Why can't you like both? You know, yeah. Some people are like, I don't like anything.
Andy, did you play any Herman's Hermits when you were a DJ?
No.
Oh.
No.
No.
That was our era, Shawnee. And the only reason we played it on the radio is because we were oldies. They were oldies when we were starting.
Well, yeah, they were actually when we were starting. Yes, that was considered now oldies.
Yep. But I enjoyed them.
How about the Zombies? Did you play any Zombies, Andy?
No.
No.
Okay. Animals?
Yeah. How about Eric Burdon and the Animals?
No.
No.
Okay. This is gonna be a terrible
show
today.
You know what Andy
this
told
show,
me?
We are 17 minutes into the show today and already.
No, it's 18 like, minutes now.
Can we play a rerun of the Labor Show?
And you know what Andy told me during the commercial break?
Mm.
He did not know who Beauregard Burnside III was with.
Yeah.
Hot dogs, hamburgers, spaghetti and meatballs.
Yeah, did not.
He did not know what that meant.
I'll bet.
Made me hungry.
Many of our listeners are you know, who watch the Garfield Goose Show.
They know.
They know.
Yeah.
They know the secret code to wake up Beauregard Burnside
the secret
III.
Code, yes. Yeah.
I was more of a Ray Rayner guy. I didn't get into the Garfield Goose.
Yeah. It was a little before your time,
yeah.
I think.
It's all right.
Yeah. It's okay.
How's the show start, by the way?
I swear we have nothing on the show.
Are we on
today.
The air yet?
Are we?
Is this the rehearsal or what's going on?
When we start recording this show, we'll all perk up. We'll perk up quite a bit.
It's got to be the weather.
Got to wait for the
bright
lights.
It's got to be the weather.
Somebody has texted in that Herman's Hermits, Shawnee, are playing at the Wisconsin State Fair.
Are they really? Great.
We should go.
We should go, yes. Maybe we can get in for free. You know, we do the Sunday morning show.
Well, we just plugged it now.
And yeah. That's right. We did.
We're going for journalistic reasons. We're not going
correct.
For our own enjoyment. Like two silhouettes on the shade. Oh, what a lovely couple they made.
All right, quick. Who was the first group that did that
The
song?
Rays.
Thank you. Yes.
The Rays.
Yes.
Did the original version
silhouette,
of the
silhouette,
song.
Silhouette, 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 silhouette,
and then Herman's Hermits redid it. That was one of the first records I ever bought. Uncle Dean, what's a record?
Did you have There's a Kind of Hush all over the world?
I had all their records, all their 45s.
Mm-hmm.
I spun them on my pretend radio station.
So as Dean Diamond.
Dean Diamond.
Dean Diamond.
Laying out the, hey, here's Herbert's Herbert's. I'm Henry the Eighth, I am.
You should have kept that name.
I'm Henry the Eighth, I am.
You should have used it. You should have continued to
use. I can
use
go back.
Dean Diamond.
I could switch back. Dean Diamond.
I love it. I love it. Did you have a picture of yourself
No.
with a great big smile, you know, like you were there just having the time of your life playing the hits?
I do have a picture of myself. I took a couple of somebody. I didn't take it because you couldn't take selfies back then, but somebody took a picture of me standing at my radio station counter. I had a counter where I had my two record players, my Sears Silvertone record players. And I'm holding up like a record album or something, so I would look like a DJ.
Sure, yeah.
Record album in one hand, microphone in the other.
Yeah.
And I put my my graduation suit on, so I would look fancy. My first publicity picture.
Yeah, nice. Someone took a picture of me cueing a record.
Wow.
On our pretend radio station.
For those that don't know, cueing a record is...
That was a skill.
Yeah. It was a skill.
That's where you put the record on the turntable, you know, on the record player. Put the needle on the record as the song went.
Mars.
The stylus.
Put the needle on
the stylus.
Record. Put the needle on the record.
It is a stylus.
Like this. I played that.
And then you turn the turntable until you hear the first sound, then back it off a little bit. So when you start the turntable, the song starts immediately.
You wanted to make sure that you did not get any wow and flutter when the record began.
I have a little wow and flutter myself right yeah. now.
Were you a quarter turn guy or a half turn guy?
I was more of a quarter turn
guy.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah.
Dorks.
It means nothing to anybody.
Definitely a quarter turn because you wanted to keep everything in sync, right?
Yeah. At my old radio station, one of my first jobs was to play Casey's Top 40.
Wow.
And that came to us on vinyl.
Yeah. That's how they did it.
Yep. We had Casey. We had Wolfman Jack too, on vinyl.
You had to make sure that you counted the sides correctly because you didn't want to go from number 31 to number 10.
right,
and
you
skip.
Had to get them all in order. Let me interrupt this fascinating conversation.
No, you did not. What?
Just a quick message for producer Jack. Could you come in here and just hit me on the head with a hammer, please?
What type
I
of
think
stylist?
It'd be less painful than
what type of stylist
listening to a conversation about what kind of stylist did you
in
use?
Your silver tone turntable. Was it a Sears that was?
Of course, it was a Sears
that fit the. It was compatible with
yeah,
the...
Yeah, it snapped in, snapped out.
Yeah, yeah, okay, there you go. All right.
Wow. All right, is Dr. Kevin Most ready?
He's probably given up.
I think we may go early a little bit. You know, we have not talked about foot disease in quite a long time on this show. We'll get to Dr. Kevin. Oh, Andy, you know who,
yes.
I have on the show today?
Oh, I've been looking forward to this, by the way.
Who I talked to the other day. Shaquille O'Neal.
He's very charismatic, isn't he?
He is very charismatic. And he is, you see him on TV, and he looks like a big guy. He's 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
You stand next to him.
Yeah, and disappear.
And you feel like you're, hi, Mr. O'Neal.
He shakes your elbow when he shakes your hand.
He shook my hand.
Uh-huh.
I thought...
Oh, picked you up and down off the ground.
When I've shaken hands with Dan Hampton, I have felt like a little girl. Because Dan Hampton has the biggest hands until the other day that I ever saw. Shaquille O'Neal's hands are enormous. They're gigantic.
Yeah.
But he could not be nicer. He could not be more, you know, personable and friendly and... He just opened a chicken restaurant out in Rosemont, and I was out there. I'm not talking sports with him, I guarantee you that, but we talked about his new restaurant, and we're going to share that conversation, because Dean loves talking with all the sports legends.
Yes, you do.
Trying not to embarrass myself talking with the sports legends. So that is coming up later on today. Dave Herman Schwann.
And good morning. Thank you very much. Funny you should mention the British invasion because That's kind of a subject here of our location for the far-flung forecast on this Sunday morning, August 6th.
No tell.
Because, no, do tell. Because we are going to Mackinac Island. Mackinac Island, of course, right off the coast of
Don't you mean Mackinac?
Nation. Mackinac Island, Mackinac Island. You know, what's the difference? But this has nothing to do with the boat race that took place 2 weeks ago. But this is a refresher of history that I wasn't too familiar with and got a little refresher course on, something I saw just the other day. On August 4th, 2 days ago, August 4th, 1814.
Is this while you were on vacation?
No, I was home by that time. Oh. No, I was home by that time. But
if you learned something while you're on vacation and then brought it back to the show, then you could deduct everything from your vacation.
That's true.
Suddenly becomes tax deductible.
Actually, I did learn a few things, so that's in the works. So.
Okay.
Anyway, on August 4th of 1814, the U.S. tried and failed to take Mackinac Island from the British. The British had captured the island during the War of 1812, and the island had originally become part of the U.S. as Michigan Territory back in the 1780s. Hmm. They built a fort up there, but the British took it during the War of 1812. In 1814, the U.S. tried and failed with over 700 troops rushing onto the island, but they were defeated by the British, 75 casualties there. In the end, though, the island was returned to the U.S. in 1815 as a part of the treaty to end the war, and ultimately became the state of Michigan, the 26th state in January of 1837.
Wow.
A little history
I
there
never
for
knew.
You.
I never knew that the British controlled that.
Yeah, they did for a time. It is 68 degrees and sunny skies in Mackinac Island with a high of 71 today.
I'm waiting for the first text to come in.
Oh, it'll come in.
You.
It will be in about 5 seconds.
It's not pronounced Mackinac.
Welcome back, Dr. Most. Always lovely to have you with us on the show.
Good morning, Dean. How are you guys doing this morning?
We are doing A-okay. I wish it were a little sunnier today. When it's overcast like this, I think a lot of people just have a hard time getting their motors started. You know what I mean? Does that have to do with lack of vitamin D, or I mean, is there some medical reason for all of that, or are we, you know, just lazy? Am I just lazy?
No. There's definitely medical behind it, and it's interesting, Dean. When the sun is out and our body sees it, it releases endorphins, which make us feel good. Those are the good hormones, and it's make us feel pleasurable. Which is really interesting, because one of the defenses we would say is, okay, are people wearing sunblock on days that they feel good? And more importantly, are people wearing sunblock today? Because the UVA, UVB rays are just as strong today, whether there's clouds there or no clouds.
No kidding.
Yep. But people think, oh, I'm protected today. I don't need to wear sunblock today.
That's exactly what I would have thought, that I don't need any kind of protection because it's so overcast outside. But you still need to protect your skin from those rays, huh?
Correct. Those UV rays are going to go right through those clouds. They may be diminished a little bit, but not to a point where you don't need protection.
Well, I've got every light in the studio turned on. I'm one of those people that I need I need the light to function. So,
it's not uncommon too. Think about in the winter. You know, seasonal affective disorder is based on individuals not receiving enough of a proper wavelength of light, and they get depression from it. So it's not unusual that people want to be in a very well lit environment. From a psychological and an antidepressant point of view.
Yeah, I am very much affected by all that. As opposed to Thursday, when I was out covering the first day of Lollapalooza for WGN-TV, it was bright and beautiful and sunny outside. There was a beautiful breeze off the lake. It was a perfect morning. And I was, well protected with my SPFs. But I felt it when I came back inside. I was like, wow, it doesn't take much to, get the effects of the sun, even though you are still wearing all kinds of protection. I had a hat on. I mean, I practically had a beekeeper suit on.
Well, you know, Dean, and I'm sure during that time you probably weren't hydrating as much as you should. So sometimes coming in, not only do you feel burnt, but you just feel kind of exhausted a little bit. Yeah. And it's mainly from dehydration.
Yeah. Yep. 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 Well, if we ever get any sunshine back, keep all of that in mind, everybody. In the meantime, let's see what we have going on here today. I guess, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about was back to school time. If you go into any store now, all the back-to-school merchandise is already on the shelf. That means our kids are going back to grade school, middle school, high school, college. What do parents need to be thinking about health-wise as they send their kids back to school this fall?
Yeah, Dean, and I'm glad you said it that way because you touched on the entire spectrum, all the way from grade school all the way through college, you know. And as we go into grade school, parents say, oh, I got to get them in for their school physical. And it's almost like, oh, I just need to check the box. But remember, these kids are fairly healthy, and this is the one opportunity for a physician to lay eyes on them and to look for any abnormalities and to look for any concerns. So, and also to make sure their immunizations are up to date. So that's those earlier ones. And then as we get older, we start to say, oh, my son is now going to go play football or basketball or needs a sports physical. And those are really important. Obviously, I know you talked with Dr. Babka last week. You know, when we look at things like Bronny James and we say, okay, what are we going to do to protect our kids from a medical point of view and those that are participating in sporting events? So that physical is even more focused. And then you touch on the other end where it's the college kids. You're finally getting them out of the house. You're just happy to pack the car to get them out of there. And that's probably one of the biggest ones because now they are gone. Now they are outside of your environment. You no longer have the assets and the opportunity to help them. So there's probably some key points there that we should touch on.
Okay. So let's start off with the college students as they're heading off. What kinds of preventative measures, things that parents and students, hey, come on, you're grown-ups now, take care of yourself if you're, you know, above 18. What are the kinds of things that they should be concerned with?
Yeah, it's interesting also the way you put that. They're grown-ups now, right? 3 months earlier, they were high school students, but now all of a sudden, quote-unquote, they're grown-ups.
Right.
And they are ready to go out on their own. So we need to know that this is a transition, and this is not just jumping off a cliff. You know, many students right now are on medications, whether it's for depression, whether it's for ADHD, some even for something as, you know, like elevated cholesterol. So we need to know if kids are on those medications, they're going away from college, that's going to be the last thing they're thinking about. They're thinking about the mini fridge. They're thinking about all the things they need in their room. So certainly making sure that they, one, have enough medication, and two, if those medications are being delivered by mail, that the right address is put, because you don't want a child to run out of a chronic medication while they're at school. And even at that point, I would say the parents need to check in so often and say, hey, just checking to make sure you're taking your medicine, but doing it in a subtle way. Hey, do I need to get that prescription refilled for you? You know, knowing that they should be running out. So medications is probably one of the biggest ones. And then probably one that parents really need to understand is that once their child turns 18, they have rights. They have health rights. And one of those health rights is privacy. So if their 18-year-old or 19-year-old freshman in college got injured and went to the emergency room, that doctor, you can call and say, hey, you know, is my child there? I want to talk to the doctor. And unless you have signed a HIPAA form where the child, and I shouldn't say child, the young adult, gives permission for that doctor to talk to a parent, they can't do that. And that frustrates parents so much. So it's really one of those where you got to understand, they're adults. Just like if an adult, if your brother was in the hospital or something and you called and said, hey, tell me what's going on.
Sure.
No, he hasn't given us that authority to share that information with you. So that's a big one I stress to parents. Get a HIPAA form signed prior to them leaving. You can get them online. Have the student take it with them and make sure it's in their medical record.
Well, you know, because, you know, maybe not at the start of the school year, but as the year goes on, young adults may have medical issues that they don't want their parents to know about. Is that in conflict with what you're talking about of having a HEPA form signed?
Well, yes and no. You know, there's limited information that some information that can be shared. And the patient or the student, however we wanted to say, he has total control. He could, just because you have a HIPAA signed form does not mean, oh, go and share everything with everybody and they can look at it. No, it would be, can I share this information with patient X? Have you signed that? So the patient certainly would say, hey, no, I don't want anybody to know this. This is my private information. I don't want it shared with anybody. Versus, no, I do want you to share this. So it really comes down to the individual and the patient. Now, if that patient is unconscious, certainly we're going to go to that HIPAA form to say, who can we talk to? Who can we share information with?
Now, in terms of just general health, is it a good idea, if kids are headed off to college, say, for example, that they get exams? Are those even required when you, start a college someplace?
Some colleges do. And the reason that many colleges do it is kind of interesting. One is they want to have a baseline health information on you so at least they know some of the basics with you as you come in so that if you do show up at the health services, at the university, they at least have some background on you. And two, probably more importantly, is they want to make sure your immunizations are up to date. And you don't want to find that out on day three of school saying, oh, wait a second, you don't have your meningitis vaccine and we require that here, therefore you can't start school. So certainly they're going to tell you what the school, each school is different, but what the schools are going to say, these are required immunizations and this is what we require from a health information point when you join this university.
Which ones are required now in Illinois?
Well, in Illinois, MMR, and then the Tdap, which is tetanus and diphtheria, and then meningitis. Those are the ones that are required. And most schools are going to say, hey, you really should get an influenza. You really should get a COVID test. But when we look at the college setting, we look at these groups getting together in very close environments. If you remember probably, 6 years ago, we didn't think pertussis was going to come back that much. And yet an outbreak at University of Iowa showed us, hey, we need to make sure that these kids don't just get a tetanus shot, but they get the tetanus and pertussis shot. Mm-hmm. So that's been added. And then meningitis is a very common illness that runs rampant through colleges, so one that we really want to make sure. So those are the three basics, but we certainly would recommend the hepatitis vaccine series, we would recommend COVID, we would recommend influenza, anything that's going to slow down the spread of transmission of an illness through a population that is very tight and spends a lot of time together.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned COVID. We haven't really talked about it very much on this segment, but it is still something, if people are going to be living in those close quarters and, big groups and like that, like they would be at college, or people who have immune deficiencies, the COVID should still be something that they're concerned about, right?
Absolutely. So the COVID, they should have that booster now. They should do that before going out. We've seen a bump in COVID. We got a 10-15% bump in COVID over the last 2 weeks. And right now we're waiting, probably will be out this week, the approval of what the booster will be for this fall. We're waiting anxiously to hear what that is going to be and what the timing of its availability will be. But kids in college, going into college now, should at least have the normal series and the one booster that's already been approved. So strongly would recommend that. And again, this is for two reasons. One, you don't want your child sick early in the year, whatever time in the year, where he's going to miss school. You're paying a lot of money for that child to go to school, and you don't want him to miss any days because of illness. And the two, you don't want to be the conduit to spread it to many other individuals, whether it be in his dorm, his fraternity, his sorority, or even in the classroom.
We've got lots of questions for you on our text line. If you've got one, you can call on the regular phone, 312-981-7200, or give us a text, 312-981-7200. Dr. Kevin Most returns in a moment. 9:51, Dr. Kevin Most, Central DuPage Hospital, on the line with us. And Rick is going to be up first this week. Hi, Rick. You're on WGN.
Thank you very much. A quick question, doctor, and thank you for all your help. A friend of mine had a knee replacement done. It turned out she's allergic to metal. Terrible pain after the replacement. Eventually, the doctor came in, took out the knee replacement about a year later, put in a titanium one, still in terrible pain from that one. Does anybody make a totally non-metallic knee replacement? And if so, where is that done?
Wow, Rick, you know, that's unfortunate. It is very highly, highly unusual to be allergic to those metals. And you know what? I don't know if there's a composite made up right now of for knee replacements, just because the companies that do it have such rare side effects such similar to this that no company has probably pursued that to make a plastic one or to make a more composite one. I don't know of one, and that's a really good, very good question. I wish I had a good answer for you. I would say that, you know, checking with, you know, some of the higher end universities where we're doing a lot of knee replacements, be it Northwestern or Rush, Midwest Orthopedics at Rush is a very high volume knee replacement university, and they may have more insight into any research that's going on for non-metallic knee replacements, but that side effect is so rare that I don't see a company doing it right now.
I thought maybe something out of ceramic, but like you said, they maybe don't make something like that. There's maybe not much call for it.
Yeah, that would be exactly it. They would need to, one, do the study that it's strong enough and that it works well enough, and then, two, they'd have to figure out if the market is there. Because I can tell you the knee replacements, Rick, that are going in right now used to be big and bulky, and now they're getting smaller and more complex and more technologically advanced, not only so that they work better, but so that they last longer. But certainly I wish I had a really good answer for you there, and unfortunately I don't.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, good luck with that. I would think that orthopedic specialists would know every single option which is available, right? Here is from the 847 area code. I still wear my mask when out in public. I've worn it since the beginning of the pandemic. People look at me like I'm crazy, but I have a hole in my lung from COVID-related pneumonia. And also care for my 88-year-old mother who has lung disease. I wish the public would be more accepting of mask wearing. I still see people wearing masks. It wouldn't even occur to me to look at somebody like, why are you still wearing a mask? It's their choice.
No, absolutely, Dean. And that's unfortunate that she feels that way. She feels like, do I need to wear the scarlet letter that says, here's my medical problems, here's why I'm wearing a mask? I'm sorry, general public, we should be looking at these individuals as, one, they're either cautious, which is great, they're immunocompromised, or they're caring for someone who's immunocompromised. So let's not belittle people who wear a mask. And just remember, it wasn't that long ago that we were all wearing masks.
Yeah.
So I would say, hey, be polite to them, be aware of them, and actually even give them some space so that they don't feel uncomfortable. There's obviously a reason they're wearing the mask, and please honor that.
Yeah, it's amazing that somebody would even do that. That's just amazing to me. This is Jim. You're on WGN with Dr. Kevin Most. Hello.
Yeah. Yes, good morning. Doctor, I've got a sister that lives in Portland, Oregon. Her and her family have all got their Kobe shots, booster shots, everything. A week ago, they all came down with Kobe. Her husband, the two kids, the grandkids ain't got it, but they did. Got it checked out. They've had all their boosters and everything. They went to the doctor. The doctor said that, I don't know if you've heard about this, it's a new highly infectious strain of Kobe that's starting up, and they've got it. They went like the whole time. We never, you know, we're cautious, wearing masks, doing everything, and they just got, you know, let their guard down, and they just caught this, something new.
Well, it's not brand new, Jim, but you hit on a very good point. If we all remember, the original COVID shots were for the original virus. That virus has mutated numerous times. And the only boost that's available right now is still a good booster. But the strain we're seeing right now, the one you're talking about, is the UBB strain. And that is, it's highly contagious. That's why we're seeing a bump in cases here now. So we have to remember the vaccine does not prevent you from getting the illness. It does in some people. But really what it does is it minimizes the symptoms and the length of illness and prevents you from going into the hospital. So individuals can still get the disease, can still get COVID. However, their immune system will protect them from advancing to something more severe that we saw in the past. We're also, just like I said a moment ago, we're also waiting for the newest update on the booster, which will be for the effective strain that is going around right now. And that should be released, the information at least, should be released here in the next week or so. So not unusual that people are still getting it. Like I said, we saw a 10-15% bump here around Chicago, and yet our immunization rates are probably upwards of, 80-90%. So people are still getting that, even though they were vaccinated, but they're having much more mild cases, and it's more like a bad cold at this time.
Jim, thank you for your call related to a COVID question. 708 area code asks if a 75 and 77-year-old are going on a cruise soon, is another booster advised before traveling? Our last ones were last September.
Yeah, this is one. Depends on the timing of their cruise. If their timing of their cruise is soon and they're at that age group, I would talk to your physician and say, hey, there's not going to be any harm in getting it. And certainly we know that the immunity wanes after a period of time. Like I said, right now, the vaccine booster that we're getting is not ideal for the strain that we're seeing, but it will certainly give you some protection. And going on a cruise where it's almost like, I hate to go back to the college analogy, but you're in a close quarter with a lot of different people that you don't know anything about. So having that additional protection would not be a bad idea prior to traveling.
All right, let's get one more in here from Dave. You're on WGN with Dr. Kevin Most.
Yes, Dr. I had both knees replaced in the early 90s. The right one first, and then the left one 6 months later, whatever. That's quite a while. And now I'm getting some swelling in the right knee, and it also buckles a little bit at times. They don't hurt, but should I have those checked? Are they good for the rest of my life?
Well, Dave, it's interesting. Like we were talking about, the advancement of what these knee replacements have gone through and what's going on with them is amazing. Now, you have to remember, you're 33, 30 years old in your knee there. Now, were they built to last that long? Probably not quite that long. So certainly I would say seeing somebody, letting them take some films, seeing why that's buckling, and see if it's a minor surgical procedure that can be done, or perhaps replacing the joint replacement with one of the newer ones. But again, if you're in no discomfort, I wouldn't be in any rush to have the surgery. But I certainly would at least get into the doctor and say, hey, can you take a look and see? Because next thing you know, you're going to have some back pain. And why do you have back pain? Because you're walking differently, because your knee's bothering you. So you don't want that ripple effect when it's something that may be able to be treated either with physical therapy, another easy, lighter surgery, or perhaps even more invasive where they replace the joint.
Yeah, somebody on our text line. Sorry, Dave, go ahead.
I also had a triple lower back fusion. And now I'm starting to get neuropathy, and I'm going to therapy for all of that stuff. But could that cause knee pain too?
Well, it could, but it's very unlikely. The neuropathy that you're getting is probably due to either scarring where you had the surgery in your back, or it could be even age or any other medical condition that causes neuropathy. So certainly, following up with your primary care doc to make sure that they've eliminated some of the other causes of neuropathy that can be treated, or at least getting you on some medication that can help eliminate the symptoms of the neuropathy or at least alleviate some of them.
Dave, good luck to you. And Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital, always good to talk to you. Have a great Sunday, Kev. Thank you.
You got it, Dean.
And coming up, my one-on-one conversation with the legendary Shaquille O'Neal. I like standing. It's my first time ever, but I interviewed Shaquille O'Neal out at his new chicken restaurant in Rosemont. And whenever possible, I'm going to stand next to Shaquille O'Neal or a guy his size, because it made me, Shawnee, feel like a little petite flower.
Petite flower?
That's what you can call me from now on.
Petite.
Dean, the little petite flower, standing next to a 7-foot man. Hello. Hi, Shawnee. Andy.
Boy, oh boy.
What? We're having an off-air discussion. I should probably mention what it is.
Well, you should get on mic if you're going to talk about it.
Everybody's a critic today.
We heard you way over here like this. That's not good mic technique. And I still want to know what type of silver tone stylus you had. Did you have the 5811 SD or the EPS hyphen 24 CS?
So I have to correct what is apparently the greatest concern of our listeners on the text line today. About 15, 20 minutes ago, I did a commercial for Blue Sky Restoration Contractors.
Mm-hmm.
Except on the paper, it's written, it's spelled as B-L-U-S-K-Y, one word. Now, if you were to see the word B-L-U-S-K-Y, wouldn't you say Blusky?
Or Blusky, yeah.
Yeah. If it's Blue Sky, as is, you know, has been done since the first day of broadcasting, if there is an unusual pronunciation for something, you would write it in a phonetic way so the announcer would know that's not the way to pronounce it. Here is the correct way to pronounce it. And in the case of Blue Sky, wouldn't you put a dash between the BLU and the SKY so somebody would know this? Well, we've got quite a few texts about it, including one of them call me a big dummy because I should have known different.
They didn't call you petite?
Yeah. And I would say that person really needs to concentrate more on common manners than worrying about how I pronounce anything. But
everybody else is so perfect. Never made a mistake.
But that's what I was discussing with producer Jack.
I see. Okay.
I was really yelling at him. Wasn't really discussing. Not his fault at
all. Well, you still didn't answer my question.
Not his fault at all. I know I'm trying to avoid answering the stylus question.
All right. Did you know that silver tone appliances were begun?
And I'm not done ripping this up yet. I've already fired off an angry email.
Okay. Did you know that
today's not the day for this?
All right. I'll just
Uncle drop Dean's
it
a little cranky. Okay. No, you're fine. I'm talking about. Hey, dummy, don't you know how to pronounce? Jerk. What were you saying now? Oh, my stylus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Silver tone, or if you the correct plural is styli.
Styli. Yeah.
Styli. Did you know that they were making silver tone appliances as far back as 1916? Did you know that?
I did not know
Yes,
that.
They did.
I didn't know record you players could buy, were.
Oh, sure. You could buy a silver tone phonograph for $35.
In 1935?
1916. That was a lot of money back then.
1916.
Yes, that was a lot of money.
What kind of records were they making in 1916?
Those 78 Shellac 78 records.
That
I play
early?
Them all the time.
That early?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I play them all the time.
I thought that was more of function, the 78 RPM records.
They were 78s.
I thought that was more like a 1930s, 40s.
Well, the format lasted up in through the 1950s.
Huh.
I have a friend that has Elvis Presley 78s.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Now, perhaps you had the EPS-74SMAD. Yeah, you didn't.
So is Shaquille O'Neal cool? I mean, was he nice to talk to?
Hey, you know what else is bugging me, by the way?
What? What?
Might as well just get it all out. Have you noticed in the streets of Chicago that they're reconfiguring the streets? They're putting the bike lanes right next to the curb. And then they are putting, so, you know.
I've seen that for years in downtown.
No, but wait a minute, though. But you would park your car to the left of the bike lane. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Am I explaining this properly?
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're driving on a street, there's the lane for moving traffic. Now they've put the parked cars next to that. And the bike lane all the way over to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's bugging me now.
Go down South State Street by the post office there as you approach Cermak. It's been that way for a long time.
It's just seems like a recipe for
disaster.
Car-to-car disaster. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bikes are way over to the, you know, the right-hand side. And, you know, I'm glad the bikes are being protected. I just wish some of the bikers would, engage in some of the rules of the road, like not going through red lights. Not turning
good thing
left
I was going
in the right-hand
slowly.
Lane. I know it. Like, you know, if the bikes are going to ride in the street, drive in the street, they need to follow the same rules as the car because they are the ones that are going to get hurt.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Or worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're on a bike. I'm in a car. Whoever's driving the car is going to be blamed. But you got to follow the rules if you're going to be out there with the motor vehicles. But now the parked car. So, like, I park my car now kind of in the middle of the street. And there's much more of a chance that I'm going to get hit by a car when I'm getting out because I'm opening my door into a lane of traffic that's moving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yes. And it kind of feels strange when you park that far away from the curb, you know, because you feel like you are opening up your car door right into the lane of oncoming traffic.
You know, as an occasional bike rider here in the city, it makes sense to me because as I ride, there are people that get out of their cars and don't even bother to look. And
that is true.
That door just flies open.
Yes, it does.
Gets it, yeah.
And where are you supposed to go? And I still see some of these delivery trucks double parked in the bike lane. And I remember there was that horrific accident, last summer with a mom and her daughter on a bike, and they got hit.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's a lot going on. Some of these streets were just not made for bikes because they're narrow, and it's hard to navigate.
It's very narrow, but they're reconfiguring the streets, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Putting curbs up.
Yeah.
They're tearing up the streets and building new curbs. They're trying to protect the bikers. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it just feels like it's going to create new problems along the way.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to bike on these streets. I mean, it's dangerous, and I try to avoid heavily trafficked areas, but sometimes those are a little better because I think people are paying more attention when you're on some of the main thoroughfares as opposed to the side streets.
Yeah. I don't know. I've complained about this for years on the air about everybody's got to follow the rules of the road. And, you know, a lot of, motorists don't follow the rules of the road. Of course they don't. And, you know, they're opening their car doors without looking to see if somebody else is coming, whether it's a car, person, or a biker. A lot of the bikers, I can't tell you the number of times where a bike just shoots out of nowhere, blows through a red light. Thank goodness that you hit your brakes in time. Otherwise, the results would be tragic.
I'm seeing more and more people, car drivers, blatantly go through red lights. In many seconds after the light has changed and you have the green, you have the right of way, they'll still go through the intersection.
I had a guy do that to me this morning.
Hmm.
I was waiting for a red light. The light turned green. It was my turn.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy coming from the other direction he apparently was transporting live human organs or something and was in a hurry.
Very important.
Yes. He had something very, very important to do. Or, you know, sometimes they're just people just aren't paying attention. But it's really aggravating. Not to mention now, because they're rebuilding the curbs. So you have to be careful. Like when you make a turn onto a street now that has this new bike configuration with new curbs, that you're not taking out the bottom of your own car by making a right turn onto a street where a curb didn't exist before.
Yeah, ma'am. Well,
I tell you. Yeah, Shaquille O'Neal was
crazy.
Here we
go. Is this the complaint department time?
Hello.
In the show?
Hello, complaint department. May I help you? Please step up. What's your complaint? Ah, well. Yeah, so...
I can't see us working in a complaint department at an apartment store.
You two are polite. I would never make it. I'd be out the first day. I'd be out like Lucy and Ethel in the chocolate factory.
Selling Vitamita Vegemin.
Yeah, I would be like, what? What do you want?
Yes.
Yeah, now what do you want? Yeah. It's your problem.
Your point is?
Yeah.
What's the problem?
It blew up and then what? Toaster's supposed to blow up.
Get a new one. No, there's no warranty.
Yeah, thank you for shopping Dean Richards Department Store. All right.
No, we don't have that anymore.
We have a lovely show for you today. See if we can get the train back on the track.
Mr. Petite.
When I stand next to... Look, you stand next to Shaquille O'Neal, you're going to feel like a petite flower.
Yeah.
Have you ever met him, Andy?
I have not met him, but I have been around him. I mean, covering Bulls back in the day.
Yeah.
He is a large human being, and not just tall. He's just a big guy.
He is a massive, muscular, gentle giant.
Yeah.
Really is the way to put it, because he's a little bit soft-spoken. He's got a wry sense of humor. I had a delightful time talking to him. I got to say, it was a really, I didn't know what to expect. I was there to talk to him about his new restaurant. He's got a chicken place. It's a fast food place, and they serve, you know, all kinds of different chicken sandwiches. I was going to talk to him about that. He's been in some movies. I was going to talk to him about that. You know, and you know what? He played at Lollapalooza the other night. He played at Lollapalooza on Friday night on their electronic dance music stage. He's a DJ. He plays not Herman's Records, Sean, like we did when we were DJs. But you know, like a dance DJ, he does that sort of thing on the side.
I used to rap.
Was he queuing up the records and everything?
If they still do that, it seems like digitally, probably you don't have to do that anymore. But so you know, we had a few things to talk about, and we had a nice chat.
Now, does he have more than one location for the restaurant?
Where is his first location here in the Chicago area? That's out in Rosemont. It's on Higgins Road. And he has a location in Las Vegas. I think they're like 12 locations, something like that.
And this is the newest one.
This is the newest one that opened about a month ago. And he happened, because he was in town for Lollapalooza, he made a stop out at his chicken restaurant here. and you
happened to be there.
And it was packed. People of all ages. You know, you would think that a Shaquille O'Neal fan would be, like, you know, more our age, from that era of the NBA. But people of all ages, little kids, were so excited to meet him. He is a beyond legendary figure. And there's a great picture that we posted on Facebook of Shaquille O'Neal and myself. And I look like I'm 2 feet tall standing next to him.
Now, I'm just a little bit shorter than you. And, yeah, I'd be interviewing his belly button.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly how I felt. That's how I felt. Mm-hmm. Mr. O'Neal, where did you get the idea for this chicken restaurant? That's how I felt.
So does it taste good?
He cracked me up. You'll hear it in the interview. We're going to play it in about an hour. We're talking about the different sandwiches. You know, they've got a Nashville hot chicken sandwich, super hot chicken sandwich. They've got a variety of different kind of fried chicken sandwiches, which are so popular right now. But one of them is called the Big and Messy. And he said, the sandwich is called the Big and Messy. We named it after Charles Barkley. Said for obvious reasons.
Those guys,
for obvious reasons.
I don't know if you've ever seen their show Inside the NBA on TNT with Ernie Johnson and Kenny the Jet Smith as well. But that is some of the most organically funny back and forth
those guys
that you could ever see.
Those guys are absolutely hilarious together. And Shaq brought his wit. You know, he brings that razor sharp wit with him. very much the same as Charles Barkley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he does solo interviews, he's also very, very funny. But it was a pleasure to chat with him. And I just want to thank him for not crushing my head. Well, imagine these guys. I mean, Andy, you've been around this. So,
oh, yeah.
But, you know, if you're covering the Bulls, say, you know, and back in the day with Michael Jordan and mm-hmm. Scottie Pippen and, you know, like the legendary names in Chicago Bulls history and the legendary names of the Lakers and, you yeah. know, name the team. These legendary guys all, you know, doing battle on the basketball court. Just standing next to one of them, and I wanted to cower. Yeah. I can't imagine what it would be like to be doing battle with them on the basketball court.
Yeah, a lot of contact, and you know, Shaquille O'Neal's only bugaboo in his career was shooting free throws, and they used to call this used to employ this offense or defense called the Hack-a-Shack, and they would purposely foul him to get him to the free throw line, and they knew he would miss, so yeah. they could, you know, take advantage. But that was about the only thing, because he could run the floor, he could pass. He had a nice little jump shot, nothing to write home about, but he was always around the basket and could just break a backboard here or there.
He's 7 feet tall. How much of a jump shot do you need, really?
Yeah, not really. It's like a bit of a push-up shot. Like, that's
stand
about
on
it.
Your tippy toes. Yep. Really, that's all he would need with that. But thank you, Mr. O'Neal, for letting me talk to you. That's Schwani's favorite voice that I do. Jeez. Of all my voices. What's a Sears stylus? What does that mean? Coming up, we'll get into our weekend theater segment. The Paramount Theater in Aurora has been running shows on their smaller stage, the Copley Theater. And they have a really interesting production that is there right now. That is called Next to Normal, a very thought-provoking production. We'll talk to the star of that in just a moment. Also coming up in the next half hour, you may have heard that MJ the Musical has just opened in Chicago. It's in previews right now. It'll officially open the middle of this week, but it's the Michael Jackson musical, MJ the Musical. And we will talk with the star of that, Roman Banks. All coming up in just a few minutes after we check in our WGN News from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. MJ the Musical, Tony Award winner. Some previews right now. Some of you may have already seen it, but it will officially open later on this week. I think it's Wednesday or Thursday. We'll give you the review on that after we're able to run over there and get a look at it. And in just a moment, my one-on-one conversation with Roman Banks, the actor who took over the role of Michael Jackson in MJ the Musical and is taking it on the road. We'll get to that in a minute. But I wanted to bring to your attention first an opportunity to see a phenomenal piece of dramatic work. The musical Next to Normal, which was the winner of the 2010 Pulitzer Prize for Drama and was nominated for 11 Tony Awards and was winner of the Best Musical Score. Next to Normal is playing at the Paramount Theater's new Copley Theater, the new intimate theater, smaller theater, that is perfect for, you know, smaller, more intimate kinds of shows. And starring in the production as Diana in Next to Normal is Donna Loudon, who joins us on the phone line right now. And Donna, I'm so glad you could join us this morning. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, Dean. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. So tell us a little about Next to Normal.
Next to Normal is a rock musical. It is centers around a family called the Goodmans, and the mother, Diana, who I play, who's dealing with mental illness and her struggles that she goes through in treatment, and what her whole family goes through as supporters of someone that's struggling
with mental illness.
Yeah, it's a story really of the dynamic of this family, isn't it? Of how how they each of them dealing with their own issues, but in a bigger sense dealing with the mental illness, as you put it, that the mom is going through, your character is going through.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's a story about grief. It's a story about love. It's a story that now more than ever, I think we can relate to, having gone through a big, you know, collective experience of the last couple of years. It's a beautiful, every performance is just like a beautiful collective moment.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel separate from the audience. It feels like we're all doing it together.
What's it like performing at the new Copley Theater? It's, you know, a pretty new theater in downtown Aurora, but it's a lovely venue and really perfect for a show like this, isn't it?
It's so beautiful. The venue has been recently renovated, and so the whole space is just gorgeous. They redid the inside of the theater just in time for this production, and it's super intimate. Every seat is a good seat. You know, the front row, we lovingly call the splash zone because it is right there. But every seat in the house is just lovely. And because it's a small space, you do get the sense that you're sitting right in the living room. You know, they're not hundreds of feet away. They're right there in front of you.
Yeah. Some productions really lend themselves to these kinds of venues that are a little more intimate. And if you're lucky enough to be in the audience for something like that, I mean, you feel like you are in somebody's living room while while this drama is going on.
Yeah.
This is your...
I love it.
This is your first time, I believe, out in Aurora and playing at the Paramount, / Copley, right?
It is. Yeah, this is my Chicago theater debut. I'm loving every minute of it.
Now, talk to me a little about your own background. You come out of musical theater in Los Angeles, I believe, right?
I do. Yeah. So I'm from California. And I went to school out there. I did theater out there for a long time, worked at a lot of different houses, and also worked with Disney for a while. And I was kind of going back and forth between New York and Los Angeles. But my husband and I really love Chicago, and we love the theater community out here. So, we recently decided to make this our home, and so we're both just thrilled to be here. And he's actually over at Chicago Shakes right now doing Beauty and the Beast. So we're having a Chicago theater summer.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's really great. And I hear that from people all the time who come from somewhere else to do a show here and wind up falling in love with the Chicago theater scene. It's always kind of amazed me a little bit that the theater scene in Los Angeles is not more vibrant than it is, given the amount of talent that's there.
Well, what I can say about Chicago is that the theater community is amazing, but the theater audiences really make it. The audiences know good theater. They see good theater. They want to be there. They sell out the houses, and that makes it a joy to perform, because you're performing for a group of people that are very invested in the art. And I mean, the teams are just lovely. So every city has its own flavor, and I really love Los Angeles theater as well. But, I'm really loving Chicago.
Yeah. Well, good. We're glad that that's the case and that you're going to put down some roots here. And to have your Chicago theater, debut and have it with Jim Cordy, it doesn't get much better than that. It was Jim Cordy, who was the Paramount Theater Artistic Director and is directing next to normal. That's got to be quite the experience for you as well. I mean, he's an old pal, but there aren't too many more talented people than Jim Cordy.
I mean, I could not say enough good things about Jim. I've had such a lovely experience working with him and with the entire team. You know, working at the Paramount has been such a beautiful experience. The entire creative team is so lovely. Corey Danielson, Lexi Bailey, the choreographer. It's just been such a dream. And Jim really brings a collaborative experience to the work. And so, you know, we all have our little footprint in the show. And that was super welcomed. And, you know, Jim has made it a point many times to encourage the cast to share our ideas and to be vocal. And you know, you don't see that a lot. So Right. It's, you know, it's been really special.
Yeah. A text from the 630 area code says, I was at opening night to Next to Normal. It's an amazing production, a little difficult at times, but so filled with hope. Is that the kind of feedback that you're getting from people coming to see the show?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. I mean, it's an emotional one. Bring your tissues. But there is so much hope. And I think it's okay to really let go in a production like this. I mean, you know, there's people are crying through the show, but when you come out at the end, everyone's smiling. Yeah. and feels very. A lot of people have said it feels like a cathartic experience. Some people have said it feels like group therapy. Like we're all, you know, just going through this together with them.
Yeah, I like shows that do that to you. You know, I like shows that really. Tap into emotions where sometimes it's a little difficult and maybe, you know, makes you reflect on something that you went through in your life or are going through in your life and, you know, may scratch the surface a little bit. But it's almost always resolved by the end of the show. And it winds up being literally a visceral experience. And that, to me, that's what good theater ought to do.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not the kind of production that is so far away from an audience member's reality. It's about love and family, grief, loss, you know, relationships, mother-daughter relationships, husband and wife relationships, and I think that's why it hits a nerve with so many people. But, you know, I think what's so beautiful about the show is it's also about the denial of working through those things. And so because we're putting it right out there, you know, it kind of gives us all an opportunity to address the same things the Goodmans are addressing. And I think that's why the audience loves it so much, because they can relate to so many parts of the show. You know, in a way, we can all be the Goodmans. We can all go through that kind of stuff.
Right, exactly. Well, Next to Normal, first of all, just to see this new theater that the Paramount has redone, the Copley Theater, that's an experience all on its own. It's a brand new theater, brand new space, and Next to Normal is its new production, which is playing there until September the 3rd. If you want to get ticket information, you can go to ParamountAurora.com. They've got all the information there, or 630-896-6666. Donna, I'm glad you could join us today to talk about this a little bit, and I hope we get a chance to meet in person. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Donna Loudon, who is in the production of Next to Normal, now at the new Copley Theater in downtown Aurora. All being put on stage in the Tony Award-winning production MJ the Musical, which was a smash on Broadway and now has started its North American tour, kicking off right here in Chicago MJ the Musical is in previews right now in Chicago. And we'll be here for pretty much the month of August. We'll give you ticket information, etc. But we were able to sit down one-on-one with the star of the show, the actor who has taken over the lead role for the North American tour, Roman Banks, who plays Michael Jackson. And he talked to us about taking on this iconic role.
We're going to get us some Roman Banks here in Chicago this summer and MJ the Musical. It's so nice to have you here with us.
Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on this. I mean, this has got to be a landmark thing for you to be taking over this role, but also to be taking over this iconic figure that you're going to be playing.
Yeah, it's a dream come true, and I hate to sound cliche, but I mean that's quite literally what it is. You know, he's a musical hero of mine and many others, and I still pinch myself. I try not to get too ahead of myself.
Yeah.
I try to stay very present.
As a little kid, were you doing the Michael Jackson moves, you know, with the hat and glove? And
it honestly started closer to my teenage years. My mom used to play a lot of Jackson 5, so that's what I grew up on, you know, like the role,
right,
and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, but the MJ phase, I guess, started when I was like closer to 10 and 11. That's when I was playing all the music videos, and that's when I was like trying to get all the moves right.
Right.
And ask my parents, I was like, come watch, I have it down. And, you know, skip to the part in Thriller and be like, okay, here I go.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So was there a lot of training then that went into this for you, or was it just sort of intuitive for you because you sort of grew up with it?
I like to say that I've been preparing for this role my whole life. I've certainly sang this music my entire life. I think in terms of training, I hadn't danced in a really, really long time. So coming into audition, my hips and my legs in general were very much screaming at me. They were like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
This is not the protocol.
Wait a minute.
What's going on?
Yeah.
So that has definitely come with some effort. But I've been trying to at least dance like Michael for as long as I've been dancing.
Just, you know, look at those moves that we were looking at. It has to be, I mean, even though you were in High School Musical,
right,
and Dear Evan Hansen, those are all very physical shows.
Yeah.
This, I would think, has to be even more physically challenging.
He was so technique-driven. A lot of people say he's the first to bring street and ballet into, you know, their own style. And so I'm in ballet classes right now, just working on my toes, working on the length of his pictures, because he was so picture driven. And you know, you want audiences to feel that feeling of watching Michael, and so I want to be sure I do it, and I do it with diligence.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hard work, but
it's an amazing show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to bring back a million memories for people who go,
right,
to see the show, but I can't wait to see your version of it.
Thank you.
And put your touch on it. Thank you so much for coming in. Congratulations again.
Thank you for having me.
You're going to be here during the hottest part of the summertime.
Can't wait.
I don't know about the timing, but it should be okay. It's better than snow.
Yeah, the show will be here through September the 1st over at the Niederlander Theater on Randolph Street. MJ the Musical. It's in previews at the moment. It'll officially open a little bit later on this week. We'll see it, and we'll give you the full review on it all. In the meantime, some classic Michael Jackson for your Sunday morning. And the latest on the condition of former Chicago Bear Steve McMichael. He went into ICU, a couple of days ago, Andy?
Yeah, it was Thursday, I believe.
The latest, his press representative is saying that he is now stable and that the sepsis is gone. The sepsis that put him in is gone. But he does still have pneumonia. He will remain in ICU on IV antibiotics until he is infection-free. He is alert. They showed him video of the impromptu rally,
yeah,
that took place outside the hospital, in the parking lot at the hospital, and put a big smile on his face. Loves his fans, says he's very grateful, as is his wife, Misty. So we wish him all the best with that.
Yeah, and there's a the grassroots campaign to get him into the Hall of Fame has begun in earnest, and that's what a lot of those people were out there for. So he's made it to the list of 12 semifinalists for induction to next year's Hall of Fame class at Canton. They're going to whittle that down to no more than three coming up in a couple of weeks. I think it's August 22nd. So there's still a lot of hope and a lot of momentum for Steve McMichael to get into the Hall of Fame. And it's not, you know, people might think it's because he's got ALS now and blah, blah, blah. This guy was a great football player.
Amazing football player.
He played in 191 consecutive football games for the Bears. That's a team record. And he was only second in team history to Richard Dent in sacks. So, I mean, this is a guy that legitimately deserves to be there. He should have been there before.
Long time ago.
Yeah. But this is something that, you know, has got some momentum. I know Dan Pompey, a local writer here, and actually a national writer as well, is kind of heading this up. He has a voice in those rooms and is trying to tout Steve McMichael for enshrinement.
Yeah, I'd be pretty shocked if that didn't happen, but I guess we have to wait a couple of weeks, and hopefully Steve will continue to get better. Mongo, hopefully, you know, his condition will continue to improve, and all we can do is continue to wish him all the best for you know, stabilized coverage. That's a tough thing that he's dealing with, so hopefully things are going to get better with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that Dan Hampton has been over there to visit him several times, and there's a lot of his former teammates that have certainly kept in touch and will pop in for a visit now and then. And you see the pictures in the newspaper and just how happy it makes McMichael. It's kind of touching just to see what those guys coming into his room mean to him.
Sure, sure. Same with Jarrett Payton.
Yeah.
From, you know, WGN TV Sports, son of Walter Payton. I'm sure, you know, it's got to bring back a lot of good memories for him, for, you know, his days of playing with Sweetness.
Yeah, and it's funny because Misty, Stephen Michael's wife, said that they're already starting to kind of prepare for a speech if he is able to get into the Hall of Fame, and they want Jared to present him at the Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Yeah, that's nice. All right, well, we'll keep you posted on all that. In the meantime, in just a few minutes here, my one-on-one conversation with Shaquille O'Neal. Somebody, I said that I felt like a little petite flower standing next to him because he's 7 feet tall. He's extremely, he's still in great shape. You know, very, very muscular, very big, strong man. But somebody texted in that they went on my Facebook page and looked at my photo with Shaq and said that I look like when Tim Conway would play that little short guy on his knees. That is exactly what I look like. Hey, but the biggest celebration of all, because Dave Schwann is back from vacation. Schwanny Day, as it has been officially proclaimed in Chicago. Would you like an official proclamation, Schwanny? Can I get you an official proclamation?
I would be honored.
Okay. Got some other things going on in there. Got a craps game going on.
I have a newsroom to run.
Yeah, craps game.
I'm
like
also
I said.
Eating a cookie.
And craps game going on.
7-Eleven.
Come on, Snake Eyes.
Let's go, Snake Eyes.
Snake
hard.
Eyes, come on.
Let's eat the hard way.
Mama needs a new pair of shoes.
Let it ride.
Schwanny, all relaxed. You actually look relaxed, Schwanny.
I do?
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Doesn't he, Andy?
He does look chilled today, yes.
Doesn't look as stressed out as... That's what being away from me for a week will do to somebody.
That's exactly right. You know what? I was telling Bob Ferguson... This was the first Sunday that I was off in a long time that I didn't check in. You know, ordinarily, if we're gone, I'll do a far-flung forecast from wherever we may be. But,
well, you want to, though. It's not like we make you do it.
No, that's true.
You want to do it.
Yeah. But I just didn't.
Yeah, you didn't care enough.
I didn't want to pick up
you
the
didn't
phone.
Care enough.
No, I know. I was... Just didn't.
Right, we handled Andy and I. Have
we
both,
were on the road.
Andy and I have
time.
Both done the far flung forecast
yes,
in your
have.
Absence,
and you don't even remember what it was last and, week.
Yeah, it was
well, I temporarily. I got a lot on my mind, Schwann.
Yeah, right.
And as I say, once the content goes down the conveyor belt, I'm done with it.
From now on, you are petite Dean. That's what you're going to be.
You just wait. I take off a couple of LBs, I will be.
A couple of LBs. A
little petite Dean. I'm working on that. So you had a nice vacation, and where? Traverse City?
Traverse City, Michigan. Yeah. Yes, beautiful up there.
What's the number one thing? I don't know if I've ever been to Traverse City. I've been to many places in Michigan, the neighboring states. I don't know that I've ever actually gone to Traverse City.
It's on the base of the Grand Traverse Bay, hence the name Traverse City.
Well, what should I see, though, when I go there? What should I do?
Well, there's water. Lake Michigan is there.
There's water. I hate to break this to you, but you can look right out the window here at WTN and see there's this big body of water that we have.
It's the same one.
Yeah, we have the same body of water right here.
It's the same one.
All right, so why do I need to drive all the way to Traverse City, then?
No, seriously. If, you know, you enjoy our Indiana dunes there. You've spent a lot of time out there when you were in Scouts.
I love the dunes.
Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore is just gorgeous up there. It's just beautiful country. It's
Schwani
rolling.
Was showing me some pictures that he took on his phone.
Yeah.
They're absolutely gorgeous.
Exactly. And
I don't want to say that I saw some other pictures on his phone while he was scrolling.
Oh, now we're going to get off on the pictures.
Saw a couple of other pictures that I'm not really intended for my eyes.
You can't unsee them either.
I will never be able to see them because they're burned into my retinas forever.
Sleeping Bear Dunes is highly recommended on my list. There's also a little town up there called Leland that I had never visited before. So we went to Leland, which is known for an area called Fishtown, where many, many years ago, the fishing industry was very healthy there. You can still charter a boat and go fishing from the town. It's just one of those quaint little areas, and walking up the couple of blocks there that in the area known as Fishtown, you'd think you were in New England. Remember the old buildings that we saw in Jaws and that area? That's what it looked like to me.
Oh, that's nice.
Really what it reminded me of.
I like we have many parts of Michigan and Wisconsin both.
Yes.
That look like you are in New England.
Oh, yeah.
It's got that really kind of old school maritime kind of feel.
Exactly. Go up to the Apostle Islands at the very northern end of Wisconsin.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Did you eat some fish in Fishtown?
No, we didn't eat any fish in Fishtown, but we did have fish, and we had dinner at friends. I have friends that have a beautiful home outside of Traverse City, so we had a very nice evening there on Saturday.
So that's why you didn't have to go to a restaurant and mention them on the air so you can get the free food, because you got free food at your friend's house.
That's right.
What kind of fish did you have at your friend's house?
We had chicken there at the friend's house.
Oh, the famous chicken fish. I would have fish all the time if I lived in a place like that, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? You can go out and catch fish.
You can. Yeah, you can charter a boat and
fry
catch
it up
fish,
in a pan.
Cook it up there, too. And speaking of fish and eating, Traverse City is known for its restaurant culture. Dean, you would love it up there with the variety of restaurants there. It's terrific.
Yeah.
You'd have a field day reviewing the restaurants
I love restaurants like that, supper clubs and these great old school restaurants, that have been open forever and that just serve delicious fish like that.
Yep.
Nice fish fry. I bet you can find a nice fish fry.
You can fry
night.
Find very fresh fry.
What? What are you drinking? I'll have a
just coffee.
Waiter, I'll have what he's having.
I'll
have what he's having. Well, good. I'm glad you had a nice time.
Definitely going up again.
Can't believe you didn't have fish in Fishtown.
No, it doesn't seem right.
It seemed like if you're in Fishtown,
you'd have fish.
Yeah.
Well, that's for next time then. Hmm. We'll save it for next time.
Next time you should go to Chicken Town and see what they serve you.
They'll have beef.
Yeah.
I had a nice swordfish this week.
Oh. On the grill?
On the grill.
Mm-mm.
Made some nice swordfish, salt and pepper.
We grilled salmon Monday.
That's good.
Delicious. And corn on the cob.
Oh, now you're talking.
That was one fine meal.
As my dad used to say, myself. Good night, Irene.
Good night, Irene.
Good night. Still have no idea what
that means.
But my dad used to say it. Now I'm saying it all the time. good night, Irene.
So you are turning into your parents.
Oh, my gosh. By the second. Are you kidding me?
I know. It is amazing, isn't it?
Took the salmon on the grill. You can't beat it. But this swordfish was just delicious.
Do you season it as well?
Salt and pepper.
Just salt and pepper.
All I put was some salt and pepper. I put a little paprika on it just for color, but you don't need that. But olive oil and lemon at the end. And it was nice and moist. And boy, I could eat seafood every single night of the week.
I know.
In the summertime.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Fresh fruit, corn, seafood, ice cream.
I had some nice rainbow ice cream the other day.
Oh, you did?
Ooh. Our favorite rainbow ice cream. We had an event over at WGN-TV. A little party, 75th anniversary party, and they invited the rainbow ice cream truck parked right outside the WGN.
And you were first in line.
I was in line several times. I was first in line several times.
Did you know that they have a booth or a stand or a store at the Navy Pier also?
I did not know.
Oh, yeah. Oh. And it's very popular.
What are we doing here, then?
I know. We should do the show out there, right?
Another place.
Look how close we are. We could do the show out there.
So close yet so far away.
We can kayak over there.
There you go.
I was looking at the kayakers on the river a little while ago, thinking, whatever happened to that idea? We've had so many good ideas.
I know.
To do the show.
You came into the newsroom after that show was over and had this very determined look on your face as you looked down at the kayakers and you say, now, can we set up remote gear
in
each of the kayaks that's waterproof?
We could pretty much run an extension cord downstairs.
That's true. Just knock out the window.
Throw a microphone out the window.
Just right out the mic. Like or the right old out days. The window. And
Yep. Almost makes me wish we were back at the old dump on Tribune Tower. Where we had microphones on the street.
That's right.
And we could actually talk to people outside.
And you did. And they called you names there, too.
Well, no, they did not call me names.
No, they didn't. They didn't. But it was fun, though, because every so often, you know, you would see people and turn on the microphone, ask them where they were from. And, you know, this time of year, many people visiting from elsewhere.
A lot of strangers. It was always fun. Lollapalooza weekend was always fun because the kids would come by. And, you know, the kids loved their Uncle Dean for some reason. I don't know why.
I don't either.
You said that a little too fast. They come by and they like to rap. You know, the young people relate to me for some reason, and we like to rap about culture and music, vaping. We like to talk about vaping.
Vaping.
What's your favorite tattoos?
Favorite lullaband.
Right.
And you would say, are you going to the Hootenanny?
You know, I was over covering the first morning of Lollapalooza like I always do. I didn't realize it was like 15 years that we've been doing that. But Lollapalooza, I guess, came to Chicago in 2005. We've been doing it since it started. So we've been out there every opening day for 2005. And the kids this year waiting in line were more polite. They were more, they weren't as nutty as they usually are. They were like very respectful. And then I realized it's because they felt like I was their grandfather.
Oh, so they were treating you with respect.
Well, yeah, respect / condescension.
Did they call you sir?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's that kind of sir that you don't want to hear. You know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about when they say sir, and it's what they're really saying is that you're as old as Methuselah, so I'm going to be as polite to you as I know how.
What was the invention of fire like, Uncle Dean?
Right. Right. I'm way so old. No, but the kids were very nice.
Why are you so old?
I don't know why. The kids just, they seem more tame this year. I haven't heard incidents like we've heard in the past of kids jumping the fences and, you know, things like that this year. Have there been? And I just didn't.
No, I am not aware of any.
There was that story that you had in the news about the guy getting electrocuted the third
two
rail.
People, they jumped on the tracks, though, to take a picture, to do a selfie, apparently.
Yeah.
And very sadly touched the third rail. Yeah. You just don't do that.
You don't.
No, but you will see a very heavy police presence all around Grant Park.
I did notice that this year also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that there were lot of Chicago's finest doing their jobs out there.
Yes. Yeah, both on the street and in squad cars up and down Michigan Avenue.
Yep.
Yeah.
They like rapping with their Uncle Dean also.
You walk up to them and go, "Hey, how's tricks?" Boy, that band was really the bee's knees, wasn't it?
Goodness gracious.
You know what? If what you were saying wasn't true, it would be funny. I forgot about this song from 1995. Shaquille O'Neal, I Know I Got Skills. S-K-I-L-L-Z, Skills. So he's dabbled in music. He's actually a DJ right now. He was at Lollapalooza on Friday night performing. He goes under the name of DJ Diesel behind the turntables, spinning records for everybody to dance. And Shaquille O'Neal also ran up to his brand new chicken restaurant. It's a fast food place that's called Big Chicken. In Rosemont, 9437 West Higgins Road. And they're going to be opening another location in Schaumburg. We're invited to come up to talk to him. And, it's like, I don't know, what to talk to Shaquille O'Neal about other than movies that he's been in and, some things like that. But I sure can't talk food with him. And it was packed. This restaurant was just completely packed of people of all ages coming to see this legend in the NBA. Maybe one of the greatest players of all time. Andy, would you say that's a fair assessment of the career of Shaquille O'Neal?
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of a game changer with the strength and the size at his position. And he won a couple of championships, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe four NBA championships.
Yeah, with the Lakers and a couple other teams, too. Yeah,
He was with the Orlando Magic, the Lakers, the Heat, the Suns, the Cavaliers.
I think he finished with the Celtics.
Exactly right. Yeah. In 2010-2011 season. And he is, I would say probably one of the more successful athletes after his athletic career, his days on the court. Ended. He's one of the most sought after and prolific, commentators on basketball on the various shows. He and his pal Charles Barkley are hilarious when they're on together, but separately also they're very witty and they're very funny. And we had a great time talking about this brand new restaurant called Big Chicken in Rosemont. Now, you have to listen carefully because it was, super crowded in this place. But you can definitely hear my one-on-one with Shaquille O'Neal.
Shout out to Chicago. I love Chicago. Been in the food business for a while now. And, I've always had the love for chicken sandwiches. Big Chicken was inspired in Vegas. We started a couple years ago. We had a couple restaurants out there. And we just started franchising, so this is one of our franchisees' restaurants in the Chicago area. It's great. I didn't expect it to turn out this big because I didn't really announce it on the radio, but a lot of people here, so I make sure to take pictures of people and take care of everybody. I definitely have family here, and
A lot of friends here, a lot of battles here against the Bulls, but it's one of my favorite cities. That's why, you know, I'm glad this franchisee here wanted to open up here in Chicago. Because everybody likes food. You know, black people love chicken. So I wanted to, you know, just show people how I eat my chicken. Like, I would always take my fried chicken and do a variation things. Take the, make a chicken salad or make a chicken sandwich. So these are the sandwiches that me and my team came up with.
You actually were involved in the creation of the menu here. I mean, a lot of celebrities come in, they just put their name on the building and that's it. But you were a little more hands-on.
Yeah, I'm hands-on. I denounced from being a celebrity 3 years ago. Those people are crazy. Never want to be labeled as crazy. I'm just a nice guy. Follow my dreams. You know, 70% of athletes after they're done playing have nothing. I never wanted to be like that. So I really understood and concentrated on business. And this is one of the business concepts that we came up with, me and my team.
So talk to me a little bit about the menu and what you've got on here. What are your sandwiches and food that you're most proud of?
Well, great chicken, antibiotic-free chicken. You know, my menu is consists of things that I would eat. Like, my favorite sandwich is the MDE. We had a very sloppy sandwich. We used to call it the Charles Barkley for obvious reasons.
Yeah, but, I could see that.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just a lot of chicken sandwiches. The Uncle Jerome, which is one that's very, very hot, Nashville hot chicken. You know, different fries that you wouldn't see anywhere else, milkshake. Basketball-sized cookie, but just a lot of simple, fun things.
Talk to me about this chicken and donut. It's like the best of both worlds in one sandwich, isn't it?
It's really good. You know, I have a team that come up with a lot of concepts because, you know, living in the Chicago area, you can't win a championship without a team. So my team come up with these concepts. I said, make it and try it. And at first I was like, but after I tried it, it was really good.
Now, how are you in the kitchen yourself?
I'm not. That's why I got a point guard, so I got a small four.
Yeah, that's why you open all these restaurants.
Yeah, I don't do it.
Everywhere you go, you can find some food somewhere.
Exactly,
right?
Yep.
In addition to cooking on WGN, I'm also the movie guy. Covered your movies. You got anything coming up?
No, I've just been relaxing, taking it easy. But I've come a long way since Kazam. That's all you need to know.
And you're going to be at Lollapalooza tonight.
Yeah, right.
Tell us a little about that.
Well, I've been DJing for about 4 or 5 years. It gives me the same energy as being in the Game 7 versus Michael Jordan in the Chicago Bull Arena. Not the new arena, the old arena.
Yeah.
The old one, we had to walk up those steps. So that's going to be a lot of great energy. I look forward to it.
That's funny. He remembers playing at the old Chicago Stadium, the old barn over there. But his new restaurant, I didn't try anything while I was there because we were busy, but the food sure did look good. If you like fried chicken sandwiches, that's what they're cranking out over there. Shaq's Big Chicken, 9437 West Higgins. They have locations around the country. Vegas is one location, and somebody texted in and said that they have Shaq's Big Chicken on some Carnival cruise ships. So, you know, take a look for something like that. We're going to feature the interview on WGN-TV later on this week. When we come back from the break, you know him as Captain Liam Shaw from Star Trek Picard. One of Chicago's very own, actor Todd Stashwick, joins us next. Lots of you have been enjoying the one of the latest Star Trek series that have come out, Star Trek Picard, the series that starred Sir Patrick Stewart reprising his role as retired Admiral Jean-Luc Picard. It was really like a who's who of Star Trek characters, featuring lots of beloved characters on many of the Star Trek series through the years, but also introduced a new character who became one of the most beloved on the show, Captain Liam Shaw, who is a Chicago-born and raised actor named Todd Stashwick. He's going to be appearing at the big fan festival that's going to be out at the Donald D. Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont next weekend. We spent a little time with Todd on a Zoom chat, talking a little about his career and being part of the Star Trek legacy, Todd Stashwick.
I'm always happy to, you know, see a Chicago guy make it. I just not even now noticed. You're so Chicago, you're wearing a Styx t-shirt. That's how
I represent, Dean.
Yeah.
I represent.
Mr. Roboto, you are
yes,
there.
Yes, come sail away. Come on.
That's right. Talk about your Chicago roots a little bit.
Well, that's where that is where I made my first steps on this earth. I was born in an auspicious hospital known as Swedish Covenant Hospital, and it is auspicious because it is the same hospital that Han Solo was born in. So I share lineage with other starship captains. I grew up on the west side first, like the first 7 years of my life. Then we moved out to the northwest suburbs, to Hanover Park, Illinois, where I did most of my dreaming and planning and plotting. And then I went to Loyola University for a hot second. I finished at Illinois State. And then I came back to Chicago proper and was a part of Chicago's second city.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. How does that contribute to you as an actor? Your roots with Second City, your roots with different improv groups in Chicago.
You know, it certainly is a respected credit to have in one's past. But technically, as an actor, having been on the road with some of the funniest people in the world that, you know, I had to run to keep up with, the Adam McKays of the world, Steve Colbert, Steve Carell, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, that was the era that I was in Second City. And so I just, I'm so grateful for those days because I got to practice my craft and go out there in my early 20s and take big risks as an actor. And then the lessons that you learn, like if you can put me in a college town on stage in front of, 1,000 college students and I don't know what I'm going to say next, that trains me for pretty much the rest of my life as an actor. And the skills that I learned as an improviser, how to listen, how to respond, how to heighten, how to be in the moment, all of that stuff, I'm still doing it today, even on Star Trek, even though I'm reading the words that the writers wrote underneath it all, I'm still improvising.
Yeah, you know, what a thrill, I would think, for someone who was a fan of Star Trek, which you'd mentioned to me before, yeah, to be part of this spectacular, especially the final season of Picard, that is going to go down as, I think, one of the great Star Trek adventures of all time.
Well, it's very humbling. I've said it before that, you know, my cousin Tori introduced me very much, and my cousin Tori and my uncle Joe, they were my Star Trek ambassadors when I was 6, 1974, giving me my first Spock, McCoy, and Kirk action figures. And so I've been pretending to be a captain since I was 6. So I've almost been preparing for this role my whole life. But it's a wonderful, rare thing to be able to contribute and be a part of a thing that I would watch as a fan. So that is an opportunity that doesn't, it's a rare and wonderful opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, to be a part of this final season, especially where it's like a Star Trek Hall of Fame that you were part of with like all the major crazy players. What was that like? Is it intimidating? Is it, how do you,
you know,
describe that?
Well, you know, it's two things, because you step outside of it and the reality of contributing to this massive, beloved franchise is wonderfully humbling. The day-to-day at work was You know, it's like any other time that I've been on a set very much, where it's like I'm working with people that I respect, doing material that I love. And so I know what that job is, having been in the business for 30 years. I was just excited because I got to do it with people whose work I've been watching since I was a young actor in Chicago. Because that's, you know, this show in 1990 is when I moved to the city proper to pursue acting. So it doesn't the times that it's surreal for me is like when at the premiere I walk into the Chinese theater and there's my costume in a glass case that people are taking pictures of. Wow. Something that I was putting on for you know, to go to work is now this almost Star Trek museum piece. And that's when it feels out of body and it feels surreal. And then to meet the fans, it's humbling to know, because people come to you and they're like, Star Trek helped me get through my parents' divorce. Star Trek got me through hospitalization. I've had vets and people who suffer from PTSD reach out to me that they feel connected to Shaw and they feel seen by the way that he was written and responded to my portrayal. So it's humbling. I guess that's the best word to describe. And I made sure that I have the presence of mind to recognize that when I was on my bridge of my starship, to go, don't forget this. Don't take this for granted. Hey, 6-year-old Todd, look what we're doing.
That's very cool. And you're coming home in August for the big fan expo, right?
Coming home. Yeah. You know, I have never had the opportunity to work in Chicago. Like, I've never shot anything here. So this is really cool to be able to come home. And the character himself is from Chicago. So we're bringing it all home for Fan Expo. And I could not be more tickled.
It's going to be August 10th through 13th. We'll put some information up on the screen of how people can come out and see you and join you. I am fascinated by whatever room that is. Is this in your house? Is this
this is my nerd lair.
You have the nerd lands of nerd lands there. I'm seeing figures. I'm seeing old video games. What are we looking at exactly?
So this is my nerd lair. This is where I celebrate all of the things and influences that pushed me into wanting to be a performer in the first place. So I got arcade games. We used to go to a place called Safariland. Me and my buddy John Martin and my cousin Scott, we would go to Safariland and play arcade games. I've got my Mego action figures, which again lit the fire. I've got Star Wars over here. I've got a lot of Dungeons and Dragons. I play D&D on the regular. So I wanted to build the 70s, 80s basement of my dreams. And so this is a place for my friends to come and sit and play, and for us to keep the fires of childhood burning.
I love that.
Yeah.
How cool that you can have it and that your wife tolerates
she not only tolerates, she celebrates it. She's got her own toys.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, you know you married the right person when you say, "Hey honey, where should we put the Batman case with all the Batman figures?" And she's like, "The living room." So yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, a real pleasure to talk to you, Todd. Thank you for the
thanks,
time.
Dean.
We'll look forward to seeing you when you're in Chicago. Would love to have you come by WGN and play the grand prize game.
What? I would absolutely. When I was a kid, I got to be on Bozo. I didn't get to throw the balls. But I got see it live.
Well, now, so, my friend, we've got the original buckets and ping pong balls with your name on them.
Come on! Well, I also got to meet Sven Gulli. So there's some delights with the access that I'm now getting as an older person to delight in a lot of the things from my childhood. So thank you so much.
It's very, as a kid who also grew up here, and the first time I got to play grand prize game as an adult, it's super humbling to know that I still suck at that game and I still can't do it. I don't think I ever got past bucket number four without cheating.
Wop, wop, wop.
I never got the Schwinn bike. I never got the Schwinn bike.
Oh, all right, that, man. That has to, it clearly, though, it didn't prevent your success.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
I know that it's a completely different Star Trek, but I just love this theme song so much. I had to add it into the conversation, and along with thanks to Todd Stashwick, Captain Liam Shaw from Star Trek Picard. He'll be here in the Chicago area at the Donald D. Stevens Convention Center at the Fan Expo, August 10th through 13th. Be able to see him and a lot of other. They have got quite a few big names that are coming out to do the Fan Expo this year. If you go to their website, you can get all the information on that. We'll be running this Todd Stashwick interview this coming week on WGN-TV Morning News. We've got Christy Brinkley, who's going to be at the Fan Expo. She's going to stop by. We've got a bunch of people from the Fan Expo. We're going to be stopping by WGN-TV Morning News this week, so make sure you're tuned in for all of that. Coming up after the news, we'll get into our Food Time show. Today we're going to be celebrating one of the finest bakeries in Chicago that is celebrating their 30th anniversary. Many of you know Bittersweet. It has been a bakery landmark on the north side of Chicago for 30 years now. That's quite an accomplishment. So we'll learn about the history of this classic bakery. That's a very interesting story you had about the Grammys splitting up that one category of spoken word.
Jay Ivey doing that. Yeah.
Because for years, you know, we would announce... Jimmy Carter won a Grammy Award for Best Spoken Word.
Yeah. Barack Obama won one.
Most presidents have won a Grammy Award for spoken word. But I think comedians are in a separate category of comedy, or are they still in spoken word?
They may be in spoken word also, yeah. I'm not aware of a comedy Grammy entry, actually.
But this new category is what now?
It was originally a spoken word category, but Jay Ivey wrote a proposal to split the category, featuring audio books in one and spoken word in the other. Mm. And he became the winner of the spoken word poetry album, and now will be the Grand Marshal for the Bud Billiken Parade this year.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. While you were gone last week, I submitted one of your newscasts for an award.
Yeah, the one with the bleeped out weather forecast.
Well, I don't know.
Right?
I'm not 100% sure. Let's listen to the entry that...
The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Increasing clouds today. High only around 5. Maybe some rain this afternoon as well. Rain and maybe showers overnight tonight. A low in the... Cloudy, windy, cold for the season, with a chance of rain and in the morning, and a high around 44. 46 now at O'Hare. I'm Dave Schwann, Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNradio.com.
That's beautiful. If that doesn't win an award, I don't know what will. Sunday afternoon on this kind of overcast-ish Sunday that we've got here. Hopefully you'll be able to salvage some of the day, at least anyway. Going to get into our Food Time segments in a few minutes. Going to talk about the 30th anniversary of the Bittersweet Pastry Shop and Bakery. It's one of the finest pastry places in Chicago. I remember when it first opened, I didn't realize it was 30 years ago. The time just flies, right? It's a very interesting history, and it kind of brought up the subject in my mind of some of the great bakeries that we've had in Chicago. I'm very happy that many of the old school bakeries are still up and running. I'm sad that some of the famous ones have closed. Like Dinkles, for example. I just drove by there the other day, and it made me sad. The sign's still there. Their famous sign on Lincoln Avenue, it's been closed for quite some time. That's why I'm glad that places like Bittersweet and many other kind of upscale places have stepped in to fill that role. And before we talk about Bittersweet, I wanted to spend some time talking about some of the bakeries that you may have grown up with through the years. And, like classic old school Chicago bakeries. You go in, you get your ticket, you wait your turn, you talk to usually it was a lady behind the counter, that would fill your order with, fresh loaf of bread, some sweet rolls, some coffee cakes. Whatever it was, we had one. And for the life of me, I can't remember the name of the bakery. It was on 79th Street. When I was growing up in the South Shore neighborhood, on 79th Street, between Colfax and Kingston, I think, pretty sure. But it was just, one of these great places. And my mom would give me some cash and send me down there to pick up a loaf of rye bread, fresh rye bread. Oh, man, did that place smell good when you walked in to the bakery. And they had a whole glass case full of sweet rolls and donuts and coffee cakes. And, it was just heaven to be in that place. And, you pick up some sweets for yourself. But I know Chicago had tons of places like that. They just kind of all went away. And it kind of breaks my heart a little bit. I know that there are still some bakeries around like that. Who knows places like that, like the old school kind of bakeries that are still out there? 312-981-7200. Like to find out the ones that are still out there. Like to find out the ones that you remember. Somebody in our text line is remembering Schmeister's. S-C-H-M-I-E-S-S-E-R-S, Schmeister's. Don't know where that is, don't know what that is, but it sounds like a bakery name, though, doesn't it? It definitely does. Here's another, somebody is remembering the Engstrom Bakery. If you're going to, if you text in where you think it was, a city or a street or something like that.
We had a Schweitzer's Bakery in Highland.
Schweitzer's
Bakery.
That rings a bell for me.
Yeah, they were there for decades. And there's still a bakery in the very same building. It's called Cakes by Karen now.
That sounds very fancy.
Yeah.
Now that sounds very fancy. I liked when bakeries or businesses just had the last name of the
Schweitzer's Bakery, Dinkles Bakery.
Dinkles, sure. Right. Yeah. I remember talking with
Lutz's.
Oh, Lutz's.
Yeah.
Lutz's. That was a famous joint. Here, of course, 708 area code. Dean, my favorite old school bakery, Calumet Bakery.
Oh, I love Calumet Bakery.
How about that?
Nut roll, Christmas season.
Oh, that's fantastic. Was a go-to. Dean, my Calumet Bakery was a go-to for my Chicago Fire Department Squad 5 that my dad was on, still in business in Lansing, and owned by, as we know, Sam Panionovich, senior.
They're on Torrance Avenue, and there was a location in Whiting for a while also.
Man, that was good. When Sammy Panionovich worked on our show, he would frequently bring in coffee cakes and stuff from dad would send bakery goods. Schwani ate most of it. If we were lucky,
of course I did.
If any of us were lucky, we put our hand in to get a piece, and you get Schwani's bicuspids on your finger. because he was taking a... That's a started the tradition of you having coffee
I
cakes
I think
and
it
stuff,
probably did, yes.
Right? Yeah. On Sunday morning?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, Calumet Bakery. That is a famous, famous place on the southeast side. I didn't know they had a spot in Indiana also.
Yeah, it's not there anymore, but it was on 119th Street in the downtown Whiting Business District.
Okay. Here is someone remembering the Nyberg Bakery on Belmont near Francisco. Nyberg's Bakery. I've seen that. I've driven past that. Best sweet rolls around. Shout out to Al and Randy Nyberg from Mike in Jefferson Park. All right. Well, there's a nice shout out. These great old places, I'm telling you. Here is one from the 773 area code. I grew up in the Austin neighborhood. There was a great bakery named Groves on North Avenue, and they would hand out little cookies with sprinkles to the kids. As an adult, you would go to Schmeichings on Lincoln Avenue. I don't remember Schmeichings, but I do remember when you go to some of these old school bakeries, they'd have little treats for the kids. You know, you come in and, you know, mom and dad would, they'd place their order and you stand there. And if you're lucky, you got a little, you know, a little piece of a sweet roll or something. And you just thought you were in heaven. That was just the greatest thing ever. Judy, hi, you're on WGN.
Hi. I'm a Southsider also. I think you were talking about Amber Bakery.
Amber's. On 79th Street?
I think so.
I know it was on 79th Street. I know it was. We lived on Colfax, so it was between Colfax and I don't think it was more than a block over. Might have been a block or two, but I'm pretty sure it was just a block. And it might have been Amber's. There was a Hallmark card store right next to it. There was a little knick-knack store. There was a bike store, Tink's Bike Shop.
I was closer to 71st Street. So,
okay.
Do you remember Mrs. Hackles?
Mrs. Hackles. That rings a bell. Was that a
bell? Yeah, that was the glazed donuts.
Oh.
I don't remember where it was, but if you were anywhere in the vicinity,
you could smell how
wonderful.
And wait, the actual donut, the pastry was called Mrs. Hackles?
The place was called, I think it was a factory.
Oh.
Mrs. Hackles, but I think it went by Mrs. Hackles Bakery.
What made those places so great, Judy? What do you think? I mean, we all have such fond memories. The quality of the product was, you know, so much better than what you get in most places these days.
And the people that work there, they were glad to see you.
Yeah, that's true. The quality of customer service was.
Yeah. Do you remember Bernie Brothers?
I remember Bernie, sure.
Bernie Brothers right next to the bowling alley at 71st and Jeffrey.
right, exactly. Well, 71st and Jeffrey, do you remember? Then you remember Peter Pan Restaurant then, right?
Oh, the Olive Burger.
The Olive Burger. My grandmother was the cashier at Peter Pan Restaurant.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Oh, but then the other day, someone was on this program talking about ice cream, and then that's Cunis's and
sure.
Mitchell.
Yep. Two legendary Southside places. You know, Cunis's, I'm told, is still open. It's now in Dalton, I think they said, on 147th Street.
Well, Mitchell's was moved to the far south side.
Yeah.
And then the guy that owned Eduardo's, he picked it up.
Yeah, those are all legendary Southside places for sure.
I think that's all we did is eat on the South Side.
Well, and you say that like there's something wrong with that.
No.
Judy, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye. Take care. Hi, Laura. You're on WGN.
Hey, Dean. I grew up in West Rogers Park, where it was very Jewish, and I think the bakery was called Gitzel's. I think that was the name. Are you familiar with 2E Avenue at all?
Sure.
In West Rogers Park?
Yeah.
So every Sunday, my mother would make you know, lox omelets, yep, and bagels. And she would always tell me to go, I would get on my bike and go to the bakery and get a nice coffee cake.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't know if that expression is used in other households, but we didn't know what a nice coffee cake, but the little Jewish ladies behind the counter knew what it was.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know if you watch Seinfeld, but that kind of thing reminded me of those episodes where they would go to the bakery to get a nice coffee cake to take to somebody's house, or, you know, a nice, I know exactly what you mean, because my mom would send me to this bakery that I can't think of the name of, and, you know, go get a nice loaf of rye bread. Well, what do I know? One rye bread from another rye bread.
Right. So then, but there's also a little cookie called Kichels. Are you familiar with that? Kichels?
I've heard of it. I don't know what it is, but I've heard the name.
So it's like these, so they're kind of filled with air. And on top of them were like crystallized sugar.
Ooh.
They kind of had no taste.
Yeah.
But they were crunchy. I also grew up in Albany Park. So my Zadie, we had Zadies and Buddies, you know.
Right, sure.
I don't know if you're familiar with
yep.
that.
Grandma and
I can't remember what bakery we'd go to, but there was I don't know if my Zadie made it up. Half the time, you know, the old immigrants would make up names. There were these things called budgies. And I think budgies were rolls. I don't remember. But I loved the fact that all the little Jewish ladies, you'd come in, there was a tiny little bakery, right, like Chewy and Sacramento. Do you know mm-hmm. where that is in
sure.
West Riders Park? By Barnaby's. Remember that,
yep.
that pizza place that was there forever?
Yep.
Barnaby's. So I just wanted to share that because it's just funny. You know, we all knew what a nice coffee cake was, and somehow they knew what it was.
Yeah, go get a nice coffee cake and bring back the change.
Bring back the change. And, you know, so I get on my bike every Sunday. We had the lox and bagels and the lox omelets and the onions and the tomato. Oh, my God. Is there nothing better than a bagel with cream cheese, a big hunk of purple onion and tomato? Is that like
stuff.
The best?
That's some good stuff. The 847 area code is remembering Ashkenaz on Morris
yep.
in Rogers Park.
Yep. Sure.
Deli and bakery, sure. Lots of fresh bread that they would slice up for you. I used to be mesmerized by that machine where they would take the whole loaf and put it in there, and then the contraption would come down and slice the whole loaf. I was like, wow.
Well, if you want to go challah, you got to go to the Jewish bakeries, because you go to the stores and it's just not the same. But I'm sure it's with every ethnic, like Italian, Greek, you
sure.
got to go to the stores.
You got to go there where it feels like somebody's bubba is in the back making it for them, right?
Right.
Laura, thank you for the call.
Well, thank you, Gene.
Great memories. I appreciate it. 1225 on WGN. Talking bakeries of the old days and the ones that are still around today, traditional bakeries in Chicago. As we get ready to talk about Bittersweet Bakery and Pastry Shop, celebrating its 30th anniversary, which we'll get into in a couple of minutes. But people on the phone lines, oh boy, what memories people are bringing back. And Roser's Bakery has come up several times. They're still in business. They're still going strong. John Jr. is John Roser Jr., now is in charge of the place, making beautiful, wonderful cakes. I will never forget, from my mom's 90th birthday, I went to John Sr. at the time, and I said, it's my mom's birthday. She's usually in charge of making all the cakes, but she, you know, we don't want her to make a cake for her own birthday. What can you do? It's her 90th birthday, and they created this beautiful cake that I took to my mom, and her jaw dropped to the ground when she saw it. And then tried it, and she said, this is delicious cake. And she was not one to give a compliment to a store-bought cake, because all cakes in my mom's mind should be made from, you know, home. But she loved Roser's Bakery, and we all still do to this day. People remembering Gladstone Bakery on our text line, Milano's in Joliet. People remembering Beale's Bakery at Montrose and Tripp, Augusta Bakery on Ashland Avenue, Reuters, Tag's Bakery. Rita, how about you? Which one was your favorite? Rita, are you there? Hello, Rita. I'll bet she's eating coffee cake right now. I'll bet she's chowing down on some coffee cake, some donuts. I don't know what she's doing. Nothing for us right now. That's all right. Sorry we missed you there, Rita. But anyway, lots of good memories here of the old school wonderful bakeries around Chicago. That was the point that I wanted to make with this. And then these new upscale places came along, like Bittersweet, just celebrating their 30th anniversary. In just a moment, we'll talk with the owner-operator of Bitter Street Bakery coming right up. Just take it off. Let's paint the town. 1236, Dean Richards, Food Time Show, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. Today talking the old school bakeries, pastry shops, all things sweet. And I wanted to focus in on a pastry shop, a bakery. I'm not 100% sure what the correct title is, but I know that through the years I have enjoyed the treats of the Bitter Sweet Pastry Shop and Cafe on the north side of Chicago many times, and saw a very lovely article that was in the Tribune the other day talking about Bittersweet celebrating its 30th anniversary. And I had a call and say congratulations. Esther Griego is the owner and managing partner of Bittersweet. Esther, welcome to WGN. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
I cannot even tell you how many times I've impressed dinner guests at my house by, after, you know, a wonderful meal, I bring out some wonderful creation that I went and picked up over at Bittersweet that my guests just went crazy over. We'll talk about, you know, the kinds of things that you do and you kind of your philosophy of all that. But tell me how all of this started for Bittersweet.
For sure. So Bittersweet was founded in 1992 by a James Beard Award-nominated chef, Judy Contino. She's a acclaimed pastry chef here in Chicago, and started her shop in, you know, the early 90s. And, you know, it was just an instant hit. There wasn't anything like it in Chicago at that time. And people just went crazy for it.
myself included. I mean, I remember gladly waiting in line because, you know, people were, you know, just trying to pick up a little something or stop and have a snack. It was also a cafe where you could sit and enjoy the goodies there as well. But how would you describe the difference? You know, we were talking about some of these old school bakeries in Chicago where your mom would send you to the, you know, to go pick up a nice coffee cake or, you know, pick up some sweet rolls or, you know, something like that. How did Bittersweet elevate that 30 years ago?
You know, as an acclaimed pastry chef, Judy was able to bring, you know, some of her French, European training to Bittersweet and really elevate what the options that you're able to bring home to your family. So we're not in the same category as, you know, some of the other bakeries that have been in Chicago for a long time. We were the vanguard of the new style of pastry shop that has now, you know, there's a lot more of them now, but we were certainly the first.
Yeah, very definitely. would you call it sort of like upscale bakery?
Yeah, upscale European style. But we embrace a lot of different styles, and everything is just really elevated and delicious, as you say.
Yeah, it really is. What are the favorites there after all of these years? What are the things that you cannot do without?
The flourless chocolate mousse cake is absolutely hands down the favorite, and it's probably one of the things that you brought home for your dinner parties.
Absolutely,
because it is just perfect.
I cannot tell you the number of times I came in specifically for that flourless chocolate cake.
You know, our breakfast pastries, our scones and cinnamon rolls and pecan rolls have always been favorites. Our cheesecake, it's just like such a beautiful, light, fluffy cheesecake. And then our cakes, our celebration cakes, that is the other thing that we are well known for, weddings, birthdays, anniversaries, baby showers. You know, if you get a cake from Bittersweet, you know it's going to be a real celebration.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I couldn't be a bigger fan. Now, when did you take over Bittersweet? This sure. was fairly recently, right?
So 2015 was when I started working at Bittersweet and you know, starting to take it over. It's been a long process. And then, you know, and then COVID happened. But since in the last year or so, you know, we've redesigned the shop, kind of given it a little refresh. So now it's very much, you know, I feel like it's very much mine at this point, you know, and I'm able to share, you know, what I love about Bittersweet with everyone. So.
Yeah. I mean, have you changed the philosophy or changed the menu? I mean, it's still, you know, basically, I would think, the Bittersweet that opened 30 years ago.
I believe so. You know, a few things have been changed around, and we've expanded the cafe menu a little bit, and I think people are really enjoying that. Added some more breakfast items. It's a great place to come in for a Sunday brunch.
Yeah. How did you survive COVID? I mean, a lot of restaurants, eating establishments had such a difficult time when people weren't going out at all. How did you manage to survive all of that?
For sure, because so much of our product is taken to go, it was a little bit more, a little easier for us to transition to a takeout only program. We did a lot of home deliveries. We did family meal kits, party packages so that you could send a party to someone. You know, just we were very creative in what we were able to offer, and I think we tried to reach as many people as possible.
Yeah, that had to be an unprecedented time. I mean, you taking over in 2015 and then just a few years later, you know, this international disaster takes place.
Sure.
That's shutting down everything. I mean, you as a new business owner, you know, must have, you know, said, oh boy, now what do we do? What can we take the flour out of now?
So, yeah, but I think, you know, we had a great team who was able to really, you know, pivot, as, you know, no one loves that word anymore, but that's, you know, that's what happened, and lots of online orders and lots of takeout, so...
Yeah. And also you have opened a new location as well, right?
So right now we're also in Time Out Market in Fulton Market, but we are working on opening a new location in Pilsen. It is at 2019 South Laughlin. So it's at 21st and Blue Island in the neighborhood of Pilsen. And we're super excited to be opening there hopefully next month.
Yeah, that's fantastic. If someone's going to stop in the shop for the first time, what are the things that they must try?
Well, we do have individual versions of the flourless chocolate mousse cake, so you can just get one for yourself or maybe share. We also
have
our chocolate peanut butter.
That's ridiculous talk. sharing a cake like that? Oh, no. Don't touch my piece. Don't touch my piece of flourless chocolate cake.
We have cake slices, so some of our favorite flavors of cake are available by the slice. And we also have this amazing chocolate peanut butter tort. If you're a fan of, like, say, Reese's Pieces, that amazing, you know, chocolate peanut butter combination. So,
yeah. Did you grow up with these great old school kind of bakeries as well? I mean, has this sort of been a passion of yours, you know, in your life?
So not necessarily, but visiting Bittersweet as I was growing up was always just such a magical experience for me. It really inspired, you know, just the beauty of everything, the refinement, the atmosphere of celebration really inspired me growing up. Mm. And so when the opportunity came to, you know, be a part of it, I was, you know, I jumped at the chance.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on the 30th anniversary and keeping things, you know, growing and redefining and, you know, changing and providing that beauty and all the delicious food that you've been serving all of these years. It's a bit of a landmark in Chicago, I think. And so I'm
I, I believe so.
Yeah, I'm glad we could talk today and remember the 30th anniversary. I can't believe when somehow when you put it that way to me, it's like it can't be. I remember when it first opened. It can't be that long. But I say that about so many things these days. congratulations on your 30th anniversary. Bittersweet Pastry and Cafe is, before I can find it here on all my notes, give us the address if people want to stop by.
Absolutely. It's at 1114 West Belmont Avenue. And so that's in the Lakeview neighborhood. It's on Belmont between Sheffield and Racine. And you can also visit our website at bittersweetpastry.com to check out our menu and place your orders.
Very good. Esther Griego, I appreciate you joining us, the owner and managing partner of Bittersweet Pastry Shop and Cafe. Have a great Sunday, Esther. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks.
It is 12:49, and this is Dean Richards Sunday morning on WGN and our Food Time show, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. And today we're talking about bakeries. Man, oh man, did we ever tap into a nerve today. Our phone line's going nuts. Our text line going nuts. But we have a few minutes. I still would love to hear about your current favorite bakeries or pastry shops or old school ones, which are no longer there but bring back a million memories. Somebody from the 708 area code texted, you may have already talked about them. I just turned on your show, but please mention Roser's Bakery, now run by John Roser the Fourth. That's who I called John Jr. He's actually the fourth. They gave away birthday cake gift certificates on Bozo's grand prize game. I remember that oh so well. I actually we have mentioned Roser's in our segment here today, talking about how much my mom loved the special cake that they made for her 90th birthday. And when I was thinking about it, we actually went back to Roser's when we had a memorial for my mom on what would have been her 100th birthday this past January. John Roser the Fourth, John Jr., as I like to call him, made up a beautiful cake for my mom. And, you know, my mom was a baker. She was a fantastic cook, but she loved to bake. And she was so artistic, really. I mean, she was a bookkeeper in her life. You know, that was her profession. She worked in offices, but she should have been a baker. She should have worked at Bittersweet because she made the most beautiful, lovely, artistic cakes and pastries throughout her life. And we were the lucky kids that had birthday cakes that looked like rocket ships and race cars. And for my little nieces, talking about Barbie, the Barbie craze right now, she used to make Barbie cakes for my nieces. But that's what she should have done. So she, you know, she said that no cake should ever be store bought, that it should always be homemade. But you know, for her birthday, I didn't want her making a cake for her own birthday, although she probably would have if I would have brought it up. But I went to Roser's Bakery and, you know, said I want something special for my mom's birthday. And John, both John the Third and Fourth, John Senior and Junior, as I like to call them, made up this beautiful cake for my mom. And she took one bite and swirled it around in her mouth like a wine connoisseur, you know, examining the nuances. And she said, this is really delicious cake. So you get an endorsement from my mom on your cakes. That's something from her. She didn't hand out compliments for store-bought cake very often. On our text line, people remembering Jaroche Bakery in Elk Grove Village, amazing breads and cakes. Somebody remembering Weber Bakery. Oh, boy, that's legendary. I know Weber's. Kirsten's Danish Bakery in Burr Ridge, their princess cake is their specialty. I don't know what that is, but I'm sure it's lovely and delicious. Kirschbaum's in Western Springs, getting a shout out here on our text line, 312-981-7200. Cheryl, how about you? You got a bakery that you want to remember?
Hi, Dean. Yeah, I feel I'm an expert on this because I do presentations on Chicago's sweetest bakeries.
Oh, wow.
In all the local libraries. And one of my favorite is my go-to, because I bring samples when I do these presentations, is T-Chex. But it's spelled with the letter P, like in Peter.
Yeah.
P-T-I-C-E-K-S. They have the most outstanding whipped cream products that you could ever want.
P-Chex.
Everything is all natural.
Where is it?
It's on Narragansett, just off Archer Avenue.
Okay.
In Chicago.
P-Chex. All right. I'm going to check that out, because I love a good whipped cream cake.
Oh, they have tarts and strawberry tarts, anything whipped cream they have. And actually, they won an award for the best cheesecake when they were on Chicago's Best TV show.
Oh,
they went in there. Yeah, so I love it. I love the Chicago bakeries, and I would never eat Entenmann's or any of that ever again once you go to a family-made, family-owned bakery.
There was just something very special about it. Which is obviously ringing true on our text line today, that's absolutely gone berserk of people remembering this. I think people have that same kind of response that you're talking about. These homemade products that people are having at whatever bakery they grew up with.
They do, and I actually talk about bakeries like Dinkles that closed, and people just reminisce about their old favorite bakeries when they were a child.
Yeah.
In fact, have you heard of Visecki's on Cermak in Berwyn?
I haven't, no.
They've been there for probably since the 1940s, and they also have a huge following. They ship their products online to anywhere across the country.
Oh,
so
no
if anybody's
kidding.
Looking for a Czech bakery from their childhood, that's another source.
Visecki's? Is that what you said? Visecki's?
Yeah. V-E-S-E-C-K-Y, apostrophe S. It's about 6800 West Cermak Road.
Yeah, because I've had many mentions of that on our text line. Visecki's in Berwyn is what people are on the text line are saying.
Yeah, they're a specialty, been around forever, and people just, when they come back to Chicago to visit, they have to go there and get some product.
Have to go to Visecki's, get some food. Exactly. That's why I think that's why we're so lucky in Chicago, right? That we have this great melting pot of different kinds of foods, whether it's a Czech bakery or an Italian bakery or a Greek bakery, Austrian, French. You know, like we were talking about with Bittersweet. You know, a lot of their influences.
Mm-hmm.
From French pastry chefs. We're very lucky in Chicago to have all of that here.
And my friend moved to Tampa, and she's like, don't you want to move to Tampa? And I'm like, there's no bakeries. We are so lucky with what we have. Even the Taylor Street Ferraro Bakery and Scafuri Bakery.
Oh, boy.
I mean, they're just incredible.
Yeah, boy, I'm going to have to tap into your expertise sometime on our Food Time show with all this great knowledge you have.
Oh, I would love to. I mean, and my presentations are really, really popular because people like reminiscing.
Yeah.
I started out doing Kittyland Remember and Riverview Remember. And
oh, wow.
Boy, their bakeries are really taking off.
It is a real, we have learned here today, it's a real touchstone for people. Cheryl, I appreciate your call. Have a great Sunday.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Hi, Alice. You're on WGN.
Oh, hi. I was just calling about all the all the bakeries that used to be in Andersonville when I was growing up.
Oh, sure.
Even though I was not, we had like five or six bakeries all over the place. And then this is a little side note. My grandfather was sent from the Fred Harvey restaurant in Kansas City to open the bakery at the Fred Harvey's restaurant when they opened the restaurant in 1920. In Chicago.
Was that at Union Station?
Yes.
Yeah.
Most people probably don't even know there was a Fred Harvey's restaurant, let alone a bakery there.
I remember when, you know, occasionally you'd go pick up a relative at Union Station, at the train station,
yeah.
And I would see the sign that said Fred Harvey's, and I always wondered what it was. But, you know, my dad or somebody said, oh, it's a fancy restaurant. We can't afford to go there.
Right, and my grandmother was a Fred Harvey girl.
Oh, wow.
That's how they met in Kansas City.
Now, what did that mean to be a Fred Harvey girl? Was that like a hostess or something?
If you ever saw the movie with Judy Garland, they were like kind of like a high-class waitress at these train station Fred Harvey restaurants.
Okay, all right.
We'll have to check that out.
That was the big deal, wasn't it, when train travel was the only travel? There had to be like some fancy high-class joint for the movie stars to go and, you know, places like that. So they had to really take care of these VIPs, I guess, with Fred Harvey
girls. Just anyone traveling from coast to coast.
Right.
They had to eat, you know.
Right, yeah, so. Right. And if, you know, you wanted a decent meal, you'd have to go to someplace like that. Wow, yeah. That's fascinating. That's a great piece of Chicago history right there. I love that.
Yeah.
Alice, I hope you have a wonderful day today. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, oh boy, the phone lines here, people remembering Dressel's and Central Bakery on Mount Prospect, Allegretti's in Norwich. I remember Allegretti's. That was great. Visecki is coming up over and over and over again on our text line. The Busy Bee Bakery. Getting a lot of mentions on the line. Bernhardt's in Libertyville. Lots of great mentions. Thank you all for all the wonderful memories.